It was a complete and total exoneration.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
Goodbye, welcome. Baby. Hi.
Yes, I'm going.
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, great. Fine. Thanks.
This is working out great. We're so excited to hear what's transpired.
Yeah. No stress at all in the desert.
None whatsoever.
We're wrapping up a great weekend here, and right now Dave and I are together in a hotel room, and I don't want anybody to make that weird because, you know, it's Dave and I. And as long as you can hear me and I can hear you, we'll go ahead and do the show.
Are you guys in your pajamas?
No, but we're in awkward shorts and T-shirts, so, you know, if you're walking by right now, you'd think, hey, what a cute couple.
So, Steve, originally you were going to be in your own room, and then you just got sent down to Dave's room. So did you have to put the clothes on, or were you already dressed in the shorts and T-shirt?
Mostly.
Slippers?
Yeah, mostly.
Oh, did you go shoes? No shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm wearing a nice pair of, kicks.
Oh, your black slip-on Skechers?
No, these are actual sneakers. I could go for a run right now.
Will you guys please take a picture and send it to us? We really want to see this. Appreciate the offer, though.
Nope.
So isn't it like 3 o'clock in the morning there?
It's a little after 4. Yeah, well, I just got in. You know me. Just another wild night.
When you're out raving again?
Yes, exactly.
You and Orion hit the bars?
You know, we had a lovely dinner with Orion and his lovely wife, Gloria. And Dave, what was his pilot's name?
Phil.
Phil and his lovely wife as well. And we were at Orion's restaurant. And it was a delightful time. We've had a great weekend.
Wait, it was...
The only problem we've had is getting on the air.
Yeah, well, that's a minor detail. Tutti Santi or whatever, that's the name of the restaurant?
Tutti Santi.
That's what I thought.
When you're in Scottsdale, go to Orion's restaurant. It's called Tutti Santi, a lovely Italian place.
If you drop
Orion... So nothing much happened this weekend while we were out, I guess, huh?
Oh, yeah, nothing.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Steve, when you landed, mm-hmm. where... Because I thought of you, obviously, because when they... You know, delivered the report over on Friday. Did you hear that in air, or did you not know until you landed?
Didn't know until I landed. Well, that's not true. I had some wireless on the plane. Matter of fact, I was on the plane right now. Maybe this would work better.
Well, the captain did not announce it then.
He didn't announce it, but I had some wireless on the plane, and I picked it up, I don't know, an hour or so before we landed. And I took it like you thought I would. I ran around the plane and said, "The Mueller report's in!" And a lot of strangers were really excited to hear from me.
That's it. I was like, you had to be going crazy not being able to start calling your contacts to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, it's funny because the irony of ironies here, right, is the guy that what we know apparently is the guy that follows the rules of the letter of the law completely has apparently done the thing that is going to allow the guy that never follows the rules to be off scot-free, at least for now. But it's a good day for America because the president did not cooperate with the Russians. That's a good thing. That's actually a good thing. Seriously, I'm not kidding. I'm not making that up. It's a good thing.
We're waiting for the others.
You're waiting for a punchline. No, it's really a good thing.
But?
No, there's no but. There's no but. It's a good thing, and we need to take it as a good thing. There's still plenty of legal problems to handle and a lot of politics. Pat Brady's going to be on in about an hour to try to explain the legal side to us and answer some of these questions.
And I don't care, you know, what side you're on, but I think everybody wants to see the full report now, right? We want to see.
Oh, that's outrageous. Yeah. No, that's exactly what this has created. We do want to see the full report, and I think we'll do that. Normally, I would say we're not entitled to see everything. I think we're entitled to see every word. So that's likely going to be happening in sooner than later. But this has created, inadvertently, I'm not blaming Mueller, but this has created a larger conspiracy than probably we had before. So we got that going for us, you know, if you're looking for that.
So
had a nice.
Hey, could you just explain? So you're on with us, and you're in Dave's room, but Dave is not on with us yet.
Not currently, because we're having a little problem hooking up our other technical system that we need. It's called a Comrex Access. If you want to buy one at your house.
So is Dave just staring at you?
Dave and I are right now trying to figure out how we could wear one headset on two heads and just cuddle.
Can't you pretend you're Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga and just share the microphone and just get real close?
Yeah, and possibly sing Shallow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
A duet between you two is Shallow. That would be...
All right, so here's what I want to do. When we do the top six at six... I want you all to say a slight prayer that we're going to get through it. But we're going to continue to work on a technical end here. We're glad we're here. We had a lovely weekend in Arizona. The White Sox won both games and leave spring training feeling pretty good about themselves. The Cleveland Indians are banged up more than ever. Saw your friend Ed Farmer, our friend Ed Farmer. And Ed's going to be on with us this Thursday and most Thursdays. And so our friend Steve Stone is very upset that he's not on with us, but he'll be on occasionally as well, I'm sure. So we need a break, right? Is that what we're going to do? We're
gonna take a break, and we only have one break this half hour.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's nice.
Yeah, that's good. It gives us a lot of time to work this out on this end. So let's do that. Let's take the break. We'll come back. We'll do the top six in a second at 720 WGN.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Let's go with item number one. That's a good place to start. Dave, stand by. I'm going to put the headphones on you in just a second, just like we're working together. Comptroller Susan, well, that's not the number one item. The number one item is obviously the fact that Donald Trump has been largely vindicated in the Robert Mueller report. It's early. We don't know everything. We also know that language can be tricky, but Department of Justice reports in a letter released yesterday by the Attorney General say the Mueller report finds no evidence that the Trump campaign coordinated with the Russians to upset and fix the 2016 election. Donald Trump declares victory. We'll take this up with Pat coming up later.
When they summed it up, Steve, I didn't realize how many people were working on that. The whole project.
40 FBI agents and a team of people that went on and on forever.
The amount of interviews is crazy.
And one of the main questions this morning remains, is the president above the law? You know, Steve Grzanich, you're old enough to remember when Richard Nixon said in that famous interview with a famous British interviewer whose name escapes me at the moment.
Frost.
Robert, when he said to Robert Frost, when the president does it, it's not illegal. And we seem to have arrived at that moment, at least on some level. So we'll get to all of it. Unless, Steve, you want to add something here.
No, I just think that it's very interesting that the Attorney General Barr made this decision in about 48 hours with the Deputy Attorney General. I think a lot of people are confused about that after, you know, 2 years of investigating by Mueller, how that decision was made so quickly.
Yeah, the key line in that still needs a lot of explaining is the report does not approach any. I don't have the specific wording here, but it doesn't exonerate Donald Trump. It doesn't declare him guilty or chargeable of anything, but it also doesn't exonerate him.
There was another line too about the obstruction part of this, where Barr, again summarizing Mueller, said most of what Mueller found did not lend itself toward obstruction. When you say something like most of it, so what's the rest of it that maybe did? And that's those details in the report that I think everybody wants to see.
And the key question for me remains, we all saw Donald Trump sit down with Lester Holt and say he fired the FBI director, which he had a right to do, specifically to end the Russian problem, the Russian investigation. And then the next day, we know from Russian reporting, of all things, that he told two Soviet politicians in the Oval Office that he got rid of the Mueller problem. I understand how that's not obstruction, but I said I would put faith in the Mueller report, and I do. I just don't know that we know what we need to know, and that's aggravating after all this time and after all the setup this weekend. Next. Susana Mendoza is going to back Lori Lightfoot in the Chicago mayor's race. Next.
Oh, Steve, can I just say one thing? I thought the nice, you know, she put out a video, and the quote she said is, she'll make sure that no matter the neighborhood you call home, who you love or who you pray to, and whether or not you were born here or came here, that you're given every opportunity to thrive as part of Chicago's future.
This is Lightfoot.
Yeah. No, that's what Susana Mendoza said about Lightfoot when she was endorsing her. So,
well, that's
I thought it was beyond just saying endorsing, you know, it was really carefully, nicely put.
Has there been anything, as you can understand, Dave and I have been outside in the sun a lot this weekend.
Sure.
As you can understand that, has there been anything this weekend that stemmed the tide of the Tony Preckwinkle leaking as in leaking oil, as in she's got a huge problem with this campaign, that she's going to get thumped? Is there anything that's changed that, Phil?
Steve, have you seen anything? I didn't see there wasn't a huge Preckwinkle.
I think her momentum's kind of switched with the Chance the Rapper endorsement. I don't know.
I mean, there were some more endorsements over the weekend, but nothing. I mean, the all of the oxygen in the room was taken up, I think, even here in Chicago by the Mueller report and the shooting of an off-duty police officer.
Oh, that was horrible. So. Yeah.
Right, and we got a week to go still before the election tomorrow. Anything you want to add about the shooting, Steve, that you're talking about coming up?
Just that two people have now been charged with that shooting of the off-duty officer. We're going to have more details on that. The police superintendent's going to have a news conference about that a little later this morning. So we have two people charged. The motive, it's going to be interesting to find out what the motive in all of this was.
He was off-duty, right? He was just sitting in the car. Yeah.
Moving on, Senator Mitch McConnell supporting two new measures as part of an effort to tackle anti-Semitic hate speech and anti-Israel language, an issue that's divided Democrats in the House from the young to the old. That's still part of what's going on in Washington. Next. If you're going on a cruise anytime soon, be glad you weren't on this one. 450 passengers were airlifted off a cruise ship that got stranded off Norway's western coast in terrible weather. Before the rescue operation was suspended Sunday, the vessel has to be towed to a nearby port, and there's another storm coming in later today. The Viking Sky, carried 1,373 passengers and crew members. It had engine trouble, and the engine eventually stopped working in 20-foot seas as passengers and stuff on board was thrown around. If you've been on a cruise, even if you haven't, think about all the tables and chairs and glass and things that can fly around.
Yeah, you see the boards falling on the people's heads.
It was awful. And they were feet, in cruise terms, 300 feet, but that's pretty close when you're a giant boat, from hitting rocks and things. Like, they were, it was quite dangerous.
Yeah, it was nasty.
Crew issued a Mayday call. There were about, 500 people that were helicoptered out?
Yeah, about half of the 900 passengers had to go out on helicopter. I think there were, you know, four or five of those rescue helicopters taking up handfuls of people at a time. So it was quite harrowing there, especially because the weather was not the best.
And it was in the pitch dark.
Right,
like,
it was dark.
Pitch black in those helicopters, yeah. So...
So imagine a helicopter is, 400 feet above the ocean, above the ship, and you get attached to a zip line, and you're pulled up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
From a ship that is rocking violently back and forth.
Yeah.
That seems like a good time. Is that an extra? Is that like one of those excursions you have to pay for?
I'm not sure.
Is that free?
And I wonder if they're all going to get a free ticket for this, or what the payment is for this.
And now here's sports. Dave, I'm going to hand you the headphones. You're going to tell us about Gronk retiring and about the Blackhawks. Here's Dave.
Yeah, so Gronk retired. Rob Gronkowski is done with his NFL career after nine terrific seasons for the New England Patriots, and certainly becoming a figure on and off the field, and a prominent one at that. Had a great career as a tight end for the Patriots. And the Blackhawks, Steve, won a game last night that, again, it might be hanging by a thread, but at least the thread is still intact, because they... That's what they are, because they beat Colorado 2-1 in overtime at the United Center. And later today, we might pass them in the air, because they will be winging their way to Phoenix to take on the Coyotes tomorrow night in another game that they absolutely, positively have to have for any shot at coming up with that wild card berth. But they are now with seven games to go, 5 points behind Colorado for that wild card spot.
Dave,
Dave, I thought you really nailed that one.
Duncan Keith's goal at the end of the game in overtime was incredible. Just for anyone who didn't see
it. Yeah, Saturday was a big disappointment. They had to win on Saturday, and they didn't. They've got to win their last seven now. And literally went out. What did you tell me last night, Dave? 5 points down with seven to play? Yeah, so they got to win all of them and hope that one of the teams actually quits and is disbanded and is no longer allowed to be in the NHL. So it's a long shot, but it's not over till the fat lady sings. She is getting nachos, and she made a popcorn at this point as well.
Now, Steve, when you were there yesterday at the ballpark, and you guys were chiming in during the
broadcast. Beautiful park. You should come next spring.
All right. When you were chiming in during the broadcast, did anyone say that they're looking for a third man?
Oh, in a booth?
Yeah.
No, not only did they not say that, Ed and DJ said, are you guys still here? Ro and I were on, for those of you who missed the exciting action, for the first couple of innings. And Ed and DJ were ready to get home for a couple days and then get on the road and start the grind.
Did you use your old-time baseball voice?
Welcome to the ballpark! No, I actually used the regular voice.
Okay.
And, but it was 80 and sunny here yesterday, and we had a nice dinner with a bunch of clients on Saturday night, and we ran into a bunch of Chicago people. Dave and I were stopped like superstars outside the park again and again and again. Hey, who's the guy from Haribo Candies that we met? Was it Mr. Avery?
Chris Avery,
the guy that is, he seems like he's in charge of sales at Haribo. Is going to send us a care package.
Yes, Steve. Nick DiGilio. Nick was just talking this morning about overrated candy, and one of the things on the list was the gold bears from Haribo. And I was like, "Excuse me, those are the best gummy bears you can get your hands on.
Those are the best.
Those
are the only gummy bears.
This is like Christmas Day.
You guys thought you weren't going to get a souvenir from Arizona.
When is that box coming?
Yes,
soon. He's out here for a couple more days. If you don't mind, if he finishes with his family, then he'll come back and do it.
This is like Christmas Day.
He has already phoned it in. But anyway, he's a fan, and we ran into a bunch of other nice folks who said hi, and a bunch of cute kids who I couldn't stop, acting like a child around. We had a good weekend. What am I missing here, Dave? Oh, goodbye. Good start on a golf course.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Dave hit it well. I hit it pretty good myself.
How did Kevin Powell play?
Huge disappointment.
Okay.
To all of us. As a matter of fact, several people who lived around the golf course asked him to leave.
Does Ro play?
Yeah, Ro's pretty good. Yeah.
How's his cold, Steve?
Mostly between his ears.
Okay.
And by that I mean not really a cold. But you know Ro, when he thinks he's sick, he thinks he's dying. But we had a good time. Had a lot of laughs, and it was a nice start. Start to the baseball season, and the sales folks are still drunk from Saturday night, and they're going to try to sober up in time for the Hawks in Arizona tomorrow night. The game still means something, so that's nice. And that'll be tomorrow night. Because I'm telling you, 85 and sunny here today, and I'm thinking hockey. Hey, yay, yay. Orion told us last night there's 400,000 Chicagoans in the valley here.
Wow.
So this is like Chicago's second city.
So it's almost like you're not on vacation.
Oh, couldn't go anywhere. Standing in line at Walgreens. Are you Steve Cochran? Yes, I am. Can I buy this?
I love that you went to Walgreens in Arizona. You love Walgreens.
He had to get his SPF 50.
I've still got the dermatologist recommended Mrs. Doubtfire makeup kit where I take this brush and I dust on sunblock. It's great for golfers. And it's called Couleur.
My favorite is watching you put that on your legs. You do it sometimes at the office before you head out.
Or the top of his head. Brush. That's really fun.
Brush on the calves. Yeah, it's nice. It's a good time. All right, we got to get to the news, and let's do that right now. Steve is standing by. Is this sponsored by anybody?
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Morse right now.
Dr. Kevin Morse, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. And, Doc, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. It's bright and early for you.
It's quite early, and I have good news for you. However, the Mueller report says you did not collude with any Russians. So
I don't know if that was final, was it?
Look at the next paragraph. It says you're not exonerated at either. It says you're not guilty, but you're not innocent. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it.
That was my concern.
What topic shall we take up this morning?
Well, we could take up whatever you'd like to take up, but I think one of the things that we should discuss is, you know, Governor Pritzker has been a bill put in front of him to limit the age for the ability to purchase cigarettes to the age of 21.
That's a good
statewide.
Thing.
it is a good thing. You know, we have about 35 cities right now that limit it to 21, and the city of Chicago is one of them. But he would make it statewide, which I think is a good thing. Others might disagree with me, but really I think it is.
So you can't really price people out of this habit, right? I mean, the price of a pack of cigarettes is crazy high, but people still smoke.
Yeah, you can't price people out. So really, one of the main important things of moving this from 18 to 21 is numerous studies have shown that if you can delay someone to start smoking till after the age of 21, the chance of them even starting smoking drops dramatically. So what we're really trying to do is keep these kids away from cigarettes early, because every smoker you know, Steve, what do they want to do? They want to quit, right?
Sure.
They found themselves in a bad habit and they want to quit, but unfortunately they're addicted to that nicotine portion of it, and it's very difficult for them to do. We're trying to do
is say, do we know why it's so addictive? I mean, for instance, my father smoked four packs a day.
Yeah.
And swore he was going to quit, and eventually did near the end of his life. When, you know, we should have said, well, it's too late now, I'm just going to keep smoking. What is it about nicotine and tobacco and nicotine that makes it so incredibly addictive? Because a lot of people will say it's more addictive than many hard drugs.
Yeah, it is right up there. When you talk about addiction properties, it's right up there with, you know, cocaine. It's right up there with the opioids. You know, it hits a pleasure center in our brain, and it makes us continue to want that and crave that. So it's that it's a chemical that can cross the blood-brain barrier, get into the brain, and it causes us to really want it even more. So it is. It's so highly addictive, which is really the difficult thing. And breaking the addiction is important, because the number of cancers that are associated with cigarette smoking, we could talk the entire morning and not touch on all of them. So we know that it's very toxic. We know there's chemicals in the cigarettes as well that cause cancer, and we need to stop it. We need to slow it down.
Doc Most, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
So is the age limit going to be the same for the vaping as well?
Yes. And Mary, that's probably one of the more important things. We say, oh, it's cigarette smoking. No, it's going to be tobacco products, so it will be the vaping as well. Vaping is one thing right now that is used, they quote that it's a way to quit smoking, but it actually, many people feel that it's a way that it's a gateway for younger kids to start smoking, because this is a little gadget. It's kind of cool. The other thing is you can put a flavor into the smoke or into the oil, so that it decreases the harshness of the tobacco, which allows you to inhale deeper, and actually the addictive properties for it get increased because of that.
So what do we know? Is vaping safer at all? There's no conclusive study that it is there?
Yep, that's the biggest problem. We don't have any long-term studies on vaping to say that it's going to be better, that it's going to be worse. You know, what they're saying is, oh, we've taken a lot of the carcinogens out, and it's really just the nicotine in the oil. But we don't know that, and we haven't had enough time with enough people using it for a regular period of time to see what the long-term effects are. That's probably going to be the hard thing, because a lot of people will vape and then stop vaping and go to cigarettes. So it's going to be tough to make that comparison in a long-term study.
I know, Steve, you're not on the Edens, but right now there's digital billboards running that say it's nicotine that looks like candy, kind of, you know, like that they're trying to go against kids so that they don't like it. It's because it looks like a fun little kazoo or something, Doc Most, like you said, it's a fun
yep.
little gadget. They're like, this is still bad. This is still nicotine, and you shouldn't be doing it as a young person.
I like the idea that you thought teenagers like kazoos.
Yeah.
and yet all the vaping places keep opening up.
I know.
They're
I know.
Constantly. I've noticed like three more in my area. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, Mayor, that's probably one of the biggest things. We have had a decrease in teenage smoking for probably the last 7 to 10 years. In the last year and a half now, that is reversed. And it's thought to be because of vaping and because of the availability of vaping and the age that's being allowed. So for the first time, we're back to the years 10 years ago, teenage smoking rates, after a long decline of the great efforts that we were making to decrease this. So unfortunately, these vaping stores that are opening, these ability to buy vaping tools have caused this to come back.
All right, so vaping is no better than cigarettes until we know that it is, and we know that the answer here is to get off everything. But let me ask you about a couple things. Hookah!
Yeah. So hookah, you know, it's the water pipe. You know, people have probably seen hookah stores opening as well, a place that the people can go and smoke tobacco using the water pipes. The bad thing about
I had my hair braided this weekend just so I could go into a hookah store.
Well, out there it probably would fit in. But what we see now is with these water pipes is that there's also a charcoal base to help them burn the tobacco. So you're actually increasing a lot of carbon monoxide at the exact same time, a lot of chemicals. And again, we don't know the long-term effects of this. But unfortunately, it has been shown to be a gateway to cigarettes as well for youths.
You know, we just were out at the Sox Park this weekend in baseball. As you know, Doc, when you and I were growing up, everybody chewed. You saw guys chewing. You saw guys, especially the managers, smoking in the dugout.
Yep.
That doesn't apply to the current generation of ball players hardly at all. But there are still some guys who chew. MLB has tried very hard to make it go away. It hasn't gone away completely. But talk about the dangers of chewing tobacco.
Yeah, and kudos to MLB, because really, if you think about chewing tobacco, what do you think of? You know, you think of baseball players and cowboys, probably, right? Mm-hmm. That's the picture that comes to your mind. And MLB said, whoa, hold on a second. We have had too many deaths, too many bad things have happened to players because of this. They've taken it out of the dugout, so it's not allowed in the dugouts now, where it used to be there'd just be packs of it around and you would use it. But we also know that the number of oral cancers, tongue cancers, pharyngeal cancers, upper airway cancers from chewing tobacco is very, very bad. You're taking this toxic chemical and this toxic drug and applying it to your skin for long periods of time, and sure enough, you get exactly what we would expect, a huge increase in oral cancer. So, you know, we lost great baseball players. You know, if you look historically, Babe Ruth died from this. So it's a great thing that the MLB is doing this. It's a great thing that you have mothers that saying it's gross when you spit. So it's not as cool as the vaping, that's for sure.
Steve, when growing up, my dentist had a poster of a really good-looking teenage football player boy before, just looking normal, and then after, he had had jaw cancer from chewing tobacco, and his lost his whole, like, his face was disfigured from having the cancer removed, and it scared me. Like, if people saw that, if kids saw what it could do to your face, you know, it's disfiguring. Forget about dying. You could not die and walk around with no lower jaw because of the cancer.
Yeah,
and sometimes that visual is going to be enough to scare people.
I'll never get it out of my head.
Yeah, because if you think about lung cancer, we don't see it. Sometimes you'll see the cigarette commercials or the stop smoking commercials where the person's on a ventilator or uses, you know, a different way to breathe. But that one's a very visual one from a young athlete that you would hope that really has an impact.
We'll take a break, come back, and Doc, I want you to talk about, we've talked about this recently, but it all bears repeating, ways to quit, what we know, what can help, what maybe is just talk. More with Dr. Kevin Most in a moment, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. Back more with Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. And Doc, our pal Kurt Byram was back in the Valley briefly this weekend. We weren't able to connect, but looking forward to having him on soon. And will he be joining us this summer?
Yes, he will. Yes. He and Tom and Chris will be out helping us raise some money for Northwestern, and we'll have a good time that day.
Yeah, big golf outing for the foundation. And again, for people that hear raising money for Northwestern, they go, don't they have enough? Explain what the hospitals do with the money that's raised.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. What we'll often do is we'll take a project that's not funded through regular capital and regular operations funds and something that we wouldn't do or couldn't afford to do, and then take it that next step. You know, last year we were working on a cancer center for patients where they can go and they can have respite. They can figure out new ways to cook, new coping techniques for their chemotherapy. So, you know, it's great when we take those funds and things that we wouldn't have done and still go ahead and do them. And surely, you know, Northwestern has cutting edge pretty much everything, but the ability to take that additional step because of the generosity of others really kind of makes it a special event.
All right, we only have a minute or two here, and we talked about this before, and there's no magic bullet that suddenly is going to get you to quit smoking today, but what do we know works best?
Yeah, you know, probably the big things are, it's a couple steps. One, you have to decide that you're going to quit and kind of make your own plan if you can. You have to make sure that you're ready for the mental side of it, because that is one of the more difficult sides of it. And then we have many ways that you can get away from the nicotine replacement, whether that is a patch, whether that is gum, you know, so at least you're getting that nicotine that's taken away, that craving portion of it. Then we also have, you know, medications now. Chantix is a great drug, and you'll probably see that over and over. You know, the person that needs that additional little help to get stopped. Probably the big thing is that a lot of people, they get their incentive to quit smoking often when it's too late. Something drastic has happened in their life. They've been diagnosed with lung cancer, or something else has happened, and a heart attack, et cetera. So, you know, try to make sure that you take that ability to quit earlier. CT scans are the only thing that we really can do to screen individuals between the age of 55 and 80 who can smoke currently or have quit within the last 15 years. They're eligible to have a CAT scan to see if we can find the cancer early enough before you have symptoms, and those are the ones that can be treated.
Thank you, Doc, as always, and we will have Pat Brady join us after 7 to see if you have been exonerated any further.
That'd be great.
As of right now, you and Putin are not friends.
Perfect. Perfect.
Thank you, Doc.
You got it. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Is Donald Trump a victim of harassment? Is he completely innocent? Or is he the luckiest man alive? Pat Brady will fill us in on some of the prosecutorial details and also where this could go from here, because there's a lot of adjudicating that still needs to be adjudicated. Huh? See what I did there? Steve will join us in the newsroom in just a second. That's the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
After a long investigation, after so many people have been so badly hurt, after not looking at the other side, where a lot of bad things happened, a lot of horrible things happened, a lot of very bad things happened for our country. It was just announced there was no collusion with Russia. There was no obstruction and none whatsoever. It was a complete and total exoneration. It's a shame that our country had to go through this. To be honest, it's a shame that your president has had to go through this before I even got elected. It began. And it began illegally. And hopefully somebody's going to look at the other side. This was an illegal takedown that failed. And hopefully somebody's going to be looking at the other side. So it's complete exoneration, no collusion, no obstruction.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Donald Trump is, as of now, not completely exonerated. Settle down, Mr. President. But according to the summation from the Attorney General, the Bob Mueller report, he is not involved or was not involved in any collusion. Pat Brady joins us now. As a prosecutor, it was not involved in any collusion, and there was nothing chargeable in the area of obstruction. Mueller's important note was not guilty or not charged. Pat, you tell me about the wording here, but not guilty of anything, but not innocent either. What was the better verbiage on that?
Yeah, on the first part, on the conspiracy or collusion, as the president calls it, they just found there was no evidence of conspiracy with either Trump, the campaign, or anybody else in the United States, which is actually good news, because they did charge Russians with trying to hack into our election. So there were actual charges against people that did it. So it was good that when offered the opportunity to do it, the Trump campaign and or anybody else didn't bite. So the interesting thing about the first point on the collusion or the conspiracy, they actually went a step further in saying that there was absolutely no evidence, which they typically don't do. So on point one, I agree with the president on the conspiracy. But on point two, on the obstruction, it's a completely different story.
All right, so let me stop you for a second before we get too far. The obvious question for anybody that has been involved in this, and that's most of America, obviously, is how is there all of these points of contact between people involved in the Trump campaign with Russian operatives that have been charged, and that's not collusion or conspiracy?
Well, here's the deal. Conspiracy is this, and just to get to into the legal weed, it's an agreement to commit between two people to commit an unlawful act. In this case, it would be a conspiracy to defraud the United States government by trying to rig the election. It's a pretty high bar to prove conspiracy. It's a specific intent crime. But in this case, they actually went further and said there's no evidence whatsoever. That's not the right wording. But so he is clear on them. These guys may have had conversations, and the Russians may have tried, and Donald Trump Jr. had the meeting and the 17 contacts. But they never reached the level of an agreement to commit an unlawful act, and that's pretty clearly what this summary of the report says.
But what we're talking about here, and I started the show with this today, is the irony that the man who follows the letter of the law, Bob Mueller, has done his job and legally found no reason to charge the president of the United States, General Branch, is good news. But anybody who has been following this, all of America, is very confused this morning. And by the way, including those who have allegedly won, because this isn't a win-lose thing. This is a determination of whether or not the president's a criminal. So the only summation we can make here is he surrounded himself with idiots, and he surrounded himself with bad hires. Your Manafort's, your attorney, your all of these people that have been arrested, and Roger Stone's and those people. That's not a crime that's going to cause him to legally go to jail. Politically, is he out of the woods?
Well, politically, at least insofar as the impeachment, I think this report gave the Democrats some breathing room. I think that the far left of the Democratic Party wanted to go ahead with impeachment against the president, and I've said this all along, I think even Eric would agree, impeachment's bad politics. So I think the monkey's off the back, off Speaker Pelosi's back. She doesn't have to push this as hard, because the one thing I thought that would trigger impeachment would be evidence of a conspiracy to with the Russians to interfere with our election. So politically, the impeachment's off his back for a while, but I'm not sure how much this does to him politically once the full report comes out, which I think it will.
So this is a legal document, which is what it was supposed to be, and this legally puts Trump in a position of not being charged. What about the Southern District of New York and the payments to the porn star and that stuff?
Well, let me take a step back, because I do want to talk about, and I'll answer that, but I want to talk about the obstruction of justice charge, the second component of this letter that was issued yesterday. They said they found evidence on both sides, and what Bob Mueller did is he deferred his decision whether or not to prosecute the president to the new Attorney General, Bill Barr, and he and Rosenstein decided not to prosecute the president. They made a decision that the case was not prosecutable, but it says specifically in the letter it did not exonerate him. And just by way of background, what the prosecutor's perspective is, in the U.S. Attorney's man, he said you can't charge somebody unless you're reasonably sure you can get a conviction. So that's a much closer case. Although he's been not going to be charged, when the source documents and the evidence come out to support what Bob Mueller did, I think that's going to be damaging. To your question on the Southern District of New York, there's a whole bunch of other cases relating to the Trump Foundation, the Trump businesses, the Trump kids that are under investigation now by the Southern District of New York, which I've always said and always thought are more problematic to the Trump empire than what Bob Mueller was doing. Bob Mueller had a very specific mandate just to investigate the conspiracy that the Russians were trying to hack into our elections. The Southern District of New York has a much broader mandate, and the Southern District of New York is probably the most aggressive and competent office in the United States. So down the road, I think that's the Trump organization's bigger problem.
So Steve and Pat, when you say the prosecuting, they chose not to prosecute because they don't guarantee a win, is that common? Is that always how that works?
Yeah, it is. You are. The word is, I think it's reasonable. It's reasonable that you're, I'm not sure what the wording is, but you have to, they have a very high conviction rate because they don't bring cases unless you can get a conviction. I was turned down many times when I was a prosecutor in these kind of cases because we didn't have the evidence. Now, take that standard right there and then add to the fact you have the president of the United States. So a guy like Mueller and a guy like Barr, I think, are patriots, have to consider what this does to the country, too, in making their charging decision. I guess the next point, too, when you've got the president of the United States sitting in the defendant chair, that's a pretty high burden to convict him. It's much harder to convict somebody like the president or a celebrity or somebody. It just is harder to do. And the third thing that he clearly said was not part of his decision is it's still questionable whether or not the sitting president of the United States can be indicted.
Yeah, but again, all of this nuance and all of this legalese has been described in a way that made the decision of the weekend pretty significantly surprising. Now, Mueller seemed to have punted this to his boss. His boss is the Attorney General. Wasn't the point of Mueller's investigation to make a determination beyond maybe he is, maybe he isn't?
Yeah, I've heard both sides of that argument, and I'm not sure if I agree. I think what Mueller did is he got to a point where, you know, this is a close call. This is a decision that could probably throw the country into a constitutional crisis. It's probably a better thing to have the sitting attorney general make that decision than a special prosecutor. That's just my reading the tea leaves. I don't know what happened in him in making that decision, but I have full faith in what Bob Mueller did. And they did a very thorough investigation for which the country should be thanking him and not trashing him as the president's done for the last 2 years.
Well, the trashing continues, which is a stupid mistake, by the way, as well. But this is not a complete exoneration. This is good news for America that the president did not collude with the Russians. So let me put your political hat back on for a second. What do we do about the fact that Russia absolutely hacked our elections beyond the sanctions that have been applied? What do we do?
I don't know what the exact answer is, but that was my question yesterday. As I read all this and watched, I go, okay, President, you're exonerated. What are you going to do with the Russians? They tried to hack into our elections. That's a very serious, that's almost a warlike event. I have heard nothing from him or anybody around him or anybody from Fox or those other networks that went nuts yesterday saying, what are we going to do with the Russians? They're all going after Bob Mueller and other people that were just doing their job. So this is the big question, but it doesn't seem to have been raised so far in this debate. So I don't know what they're going to do with them. They need to do something.
Yeah, and let's be clear on something. It's not a win. It's not a loss. It's a decision that was made based on legal facts by a guy that had the qualifications to do it. You don't wake up this morning and go, well, this is fantastic. The president can't be charged, even though he's been hanging around with some complete sleazeballs. He brought criminals into the federal government, and he may or may not be guilty of more crimes. That's far from a win. Be happy that he didn't collude with the Russians, but there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. I don't care about the Democrats. I don't care about the Republicans. I care about whether the president and the people around him are going to be able to be functional for the next year and a half as we get into the campaign for 2020, because he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I agree. And the bigger, even that statement you just played on the lead-in, half of what he said was just nonsense and a lie, but he continues to do it. I don't get why he feels he needs to do that. He could have claimed victory and walked on the plane, but he had to take it one step further and throw three or four lies in there. But again, to me, this is almost like a divorce. Everybody in the Congress, everybody's fighting back and forth with one another. Let's focus on the Russians. They tried to hack into our elections. These people are our enemies,
and we need to
realize that. Yeah, they've been doing it for years, but this time they got caught. They've actually been, these companies that were charged were tied directly to Putin. And the next time the president stands next to Putin at a press conference like he did 4 or 5 months ago, he needs to point that out. This is bad stuff, and he's doing this to our country. To me, that should be the focus, is the bad actions of the Russian government and Putin.
So, for people, look, one-third of the country supports Trump no matter what he says. Two-thirds of the country don't. For the two-thirds of the country that don't, what do you say to them this morning to make them feel like America's functioning on all the levels it should, and this is the results we need to accept?
I think that they have their choice at the ballot box here in 587 days or whatever it is, and if you don't like the president, like, I'm not voting for Donald Trump. I'll tell you right now, I'll never vote for Donald Trump. But the reality is, this on the conspiracy thing, he's been exonerated, beyond exonerated. They made it clear that it didn't, his campaign, he, anybody around him wasn't involved in it. We got to forget that. Forget the impeachment stuff. Let's start focusing on the issues that matter. We have a lot of issues we need to deal with, and particularly on what the Russians did. But you got to put it, everybody's got to kind of put it away, because we've had the debate. The debate is over. Let's move on to the next phase. You don't have to vote for him. I'm not voting for him. A lot of people aren't voting for him, but you got to give it up. And it's time to move on both sides.
But it's time to move on. He's the president, but it's not wrong to demand that he be the president and protect us against one of our, if not our primary enemy, one of our enemies, who is actively interested in hurting us on every level and infiltrating and destroying the next election to whatever means they need. It's not wrong to ask him to do that. He's the president of the United States.
No, it's not just not wrong. It's your obligation. I mean, as a citizen, that's why we have free speech. You're supposed to speak up and say, hey, what's going on? But that doesn't mean that everybody on the other side of the aisle or doesn't agree with you is your enemy. But we all should be focused on what's good for the country. And I hope, I don't think this will happen, but I would hope this is kind of a turning point. Let's move on and start focusing on important things. But I don't think the president's going to give it up. This is going to be on the campaign for the next 18, 20 months, whatever it is. He's going to talk about how he was a victim. But the reality is, as you described, he surrounded himself with a bunch of idiots who didn't know what was going on. Now he's commander-in-chief. He kept a lot of those people around. He creates a lot of his own problems. Had he not fired Comey in the way he did, there would be no Bob Mueller. So when he says unfairness, illegally started, it's all a bunch of nonsense. This is 100% his own doing because he puts incompetent people around him. He, to a certain extent, he's very incompetent himself in understanding the institutions of our government. A lot of this, or most of this, is all his own creation.
All right, last question as we make an attempt to go forward here. What we have is Attorney General Barr's summation of a report we haven't seen all of. Will we see this report? Will it be released to America, the Starr report, the 9/11 report? Will that be released at some point, and should it be?
I think it will be, but there's a couple things. There's national security information in there probably that probably won't be released. But there's another thing, and again, not to get too much into the legal weeds, it's called Rule 6E. If you receive information pursuant to a grand jury subpoena, you can't disclose that information. The prosecutor can't, unless you go to a judge and ask for that information to be released. So there's going to be some process here to get that released. I suspect most of the 6E will be released. But remember, the reason you don't release grand jury information, why the situation is kind of unique, the function of a private or the secret grand jury is to protect innocent people. There is information in this report, I'm sure, that's very damaging to some very innocent people, and that's the consideration they're going to have to go through. I kind of doubt that Congress will do that rationally, but there is a court in the middle that will protect people from being wrongly accused or put in a bad light.
It's Pat Brady. You'll join us later this week?
Absolutely. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks. There you go. That's the legal explanation. More to say about it coming up. And if we can find time, we'll grab a couple of phone calls from you guys as well. Certainly some text messages that Sandberg will read to me. We're live in Arizona in the desert, wrapping up the weekend with the White Sox, and the Blackhawks are here tomorrow night. Not dead yet, but boy, oh boy, it's a little tough from here. Let's come back and continue with the most valuable person on the planet next.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
All right, time for the most valuable person on the planet. Before we do that, we are now hooked up where Dave doesn't have to sit on my lap like a ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah, but it was kind of fun.
We're still in the same room?
We're still in the same room.
Are we on one machine?
No, we're on separate machines and separate headsets, and technology is a beautiful thing.
So are you sitting on beds, or how are we sitting?
One's not in the bathroom, are they?
No, Dave's on a couch, okay. And I'm sitting at a desk chair.
What kind of room do they have where they've got couches?
Oh, just a suite probably.
Huh. Oh, yeah.
Room service coming, I suppose.
Listen, we barely got this thing on the air. We're not too worried about room service at this point. thanks to all the stress of our engineers back there, we'll deal with beating to death the person who packed the bag poorly. But for Bob and Bob, thank you for making this work. And Bob pushing the buttons and stuff today, thank you for that. Now, the interesting thing here is Dave is sitting on a couch, what'd you say, Dave, 2 feet from me?
Yeah, probably.
And if I were to look at Dave, I would be very thrown off because it would look like a bad kung fu movie. There is a full 1 second delay between when we talk and when it's heard in our respective headphones.
Oh, so are you going back to back?
I think it's the only way to not look at it. Frankly, there's a shame of not looking at each other. The way we're dressed is probably appropriate as well.
And just so you know, there's two Marys in the studio today, and then we have the two Bob Fs. So that's we're only doing we need another Dave and another Steve. Oh, we have two Steves. We need another
we do
Dave.
Have yeah. We just And then we have a Joe and a Michael, so that doesn't work.
A Joe, a Michael, and a Dave, so you three screwed it up. And Joe, thank you for all of the documentation you sent me. And Michael, thanks for whatever you do for us. All right, so I think the thank yous are complete. Let's move on to the most valuable person on the planet who joins us now on the telephone. How would I pronounce your last name, sir?
Garrido.
Garrido, how are you, sir?
Good, good. How are you doing today? Thank you very much for having me on the show. Appreciate that.
Appreciate you being on. Officer Garrido, officer where?
I'm a lieutenant here in the 16th District on the northwest side of Chicago.
Well, stay safe. Thanks for the work you're doing there.
Thank you.
Are the guy that runs the Garrido Stray Rescue Foundation. We talking dogs, cats, ferrets?
We're talking, yes, my wife and I run the organization, and it's mostly dogs, but we also help cats, and actually we help just about any animal that comes our way, but we've had pigs and turtles and a few roosters, but mostly it's dogs.
What about a llama? Llama, emu, any
If you find a llama that needs a home, we can try to work something out.
Where's the love of animals come from? You had it since you were a kid?
Yes, absolutely. I've always loved animals, but I'm actually allergic to dogs and cats. And when I met my wife, she had a dog that she was not about to get rid of. And so I got shots for about 5 or 6 years to be able to live with the dog. And my wife has this huge, huge passion for animals. We can't even kill an insect in the house, and that's kind of what launched all of this together, her and I together, putting this foundation together.
Can't kill an insect. You must really love this woman.
I do, absolutely.
Officer, there's a vet who's involved that helps you out when you have an animal that needs help. We should probably give him some credit, right?
Yes, Dr. Sackis and his team at Niles Animal Hospital, we partnered up with them, and they do pretty much all of our veterinary needs. And then we also are partnered up with the Doghouse Boarding Grooming. They help us out with the dogs that need, basically some of them come in pretty bad condition, and they get a spa day there, and they'll help hold on to them there as well for us until we can get them in homes.
You're a city cop. That's a very demanding job. When do you find time to do this?
Well, I just stay very busy, so my wife picks up a lot of the slack, too. We both work full-time jobs, but, you know, it's a passion of ours, so we're able to squeeze it in and get it done.
I think the grooming part is important because after these animals are healthy, you want to get them adopted, and, you know, if it looks like a scraggly, dirty, smelly type animal, they may not get as many looks as a fresh,
right,
fluffy, clean animal.
Right. Our primary mission is to get these animals back home to their families, and that's kind of how it evolved to where we are right now. We have so many animals that come into the district here, the 16th District up at Jefferson Park. Last year, 297 of them. And we wanted to come up with a way so all these dogs weren't getting sent to animal care and control. And what we ended up doing is we started posting these animals on Facebook, and they would get shared, and we were finding that we were getting them home right away. So it kind of grew organically that way to a point where now, for example, the 297 that came in last year, we were able to get 82% of them back home to their families. So that's our primary goal, is getting them home. And then those that come in that are either abused or neglected or we just can't find their owners, then we get them taken care of and get them into new homes.
Does every pet call in the 16th go to you? Hey, give me Garrido.
We're getting a ton. Yeah, we definitely get a lot. Our name is spread throughout the city, so they come in from everywhere. We have a dog right now that's actually at Blue Pearl because the surgeries that they did at Niles, we needed to do another surgery, and they needed to move her to another emergency place. But she was in such bad condition. She actually came from the 9th District, which is basically on the southwest side.
Oh, Blue Pearl is right by my house.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, little Marge is over there right now. People have been following her on Facebook.
Aw, little Marge.
And Mary Lynn Pruss told us all about you, and I'm glad she did. You're an amazing guy, and obviously your wife as well. What's your wife's name?
Anna. Anna Garrido.
Anna Garrido. You guys have kids, too, or you got enough with the dogs and cats?
Enough with the dogs and cats. It keeps us busy, so we probably wouldn't be able to do this if we had kids, too. So.
Well, keep up the good work, and as I said, stay safe. What does your wife do for work, you said?
She works for Department of Homeland Security. I can't tell you because I'd have to take you out if I did, so I can't give you all the details.
I'm in Phoenix. Let me tell you something. I'm in Phoenix. If you can get me from here, you're really impressive. thank you for the work you're doing. Give your wife a hug, and it's GarridoStrayRescue.org. There's lots of ways you can help, GarridoStrayRescue.org. Thank you, officer.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
That guy is busy. So, Ryan Noble's going to join us coming up here in just a couple of minutes on 720 WGN.
If anyone thinks that the Mueller report being concluded is the end of the Democrats' attempt to take down President Trump, they haven't been paying attention the last 2 years. You know, it was striking as I listened to your interview with Congressman Nadler that he was immediately pivoting away. Okay, fine. You know, yesterday, the Mueller report was the end-all and be-all. It was going to be the salvation for the Democrats and destroy President Trump. Now you can already see the Democrats pivoting away saying, okay, well, we need to do other investigations. It's got to be someone else. It's got to be the Southern District of New York. It's got to be the New York Attorney General. It's got to be Congress.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
That's the delightful and charming Ted Cruz. Losing it a little bit last night. He couldn't wait to get to a microphone and talk to everybody. Ryan Nobles joins us now from CNN. Ryan, this is good news for America. The President of the United States did not collude with the Russians. It doesn't change the fact that the Russians hacked our election. This was never a question about the legitimacy of the election, because nobody can determine whether or not that hacking specifically allowed Donald Trump to win and Hillary Clinton to lose. This was not an attack on Donald Trump personally. This is a legitimate criminal investigation by an incredibly highly regarded man, an American hero and a patriot. And he should be treated as the same, regardless how you feel about the outcome.
I'm so glad you started with that, Steve, because I think the thing that frustrated me the most over the weekend, watching the way that politicians from both sides of the aisle were responding to this report, it seemed to me like we were losing the forest for the trees here. I mean, you and I have talked for the entire 2 years of this investigation about how there was as just as good a chance that the Mueller report was going to clear the president of any connection to Russian meddling in the election as there was that it was going to throw the book at him. And what we were hoping to find, what we were hoping to learn, is some sort of definitive and clear picture of exactly just what responsibility the president had as it related to that specific thread. And, of course, we need to see the full report. I think everybody agrees that we need to see the full report. But if you just set aside the name Donald Trump and you just describe the office of President of the United States, and if you were to wake up one morning and someone were to tell you that, yes, your President of the United States was not colluding with a foreign government to win an election, that's really good news. That's good news for America. That's good news for all of us as constituents. And it resumes a level of healthy of trust and confidence that we can have in our democratic process. And now I think we can set this issue aside and then really talk about policy and substantive issues and decide whether or not Donald Trump deserves another 4 years in office. So, I think there's still going to be a lot of talk about obstruction of justice. Ted Cruz maybe went a little too far in that bite you played coming into us, but I do think that there is a real possibility that Democrats will overplay their hand here and continue to push the conspiracy angle on all of this, where really perhaps their best move is to now just talk about the issues at hand and let the American people decide whether or not they want Donald Trump or they want somebody else.
I agree with you in principle. However, there is a congressional oversight piece to this, and if the Republicans were in charge and Barack Obama or a Democrat was in the White House in these circumstances, they would do the same thing. So if they don't do their investigations, and the degree of overplay could be argued, but if they don't do them, are they doing their job?
Well, that's a great point, and I do think that there's a fine line that they're going to have to walk here. You know, there's a big difference between just kind of the way the Republicans treated Hillary Clinton, and it was, attack every single narrow thread related to anything she could have been involved in with the hope of finding something, versus if you've got something substantive that you want to look into, then it's worth looking into. And I do think that's why it is so important for as much of this report as possible to become public, because, I'm a skeptic of all sides. As much as I don't trust William Barr's assessment of the Mueller report without seeing it myself, I also don't trust Adam Schiff's assessment of the Mueller report without seeing it myself. I think that we need to see as much of this as we can. I'm not among the people that believe that, all 2,000 pages of documents and subpoenas and everything that Mueller uncovered should be brought out in public. I do believe that there's a reason that some of that stuff is kept behind closed doors, the grand jury proceedings in particular. But I do think the kind of broad, conclusions that he drew, that Mueller, from Mueller's voice, not through William Barr's voice or not through Adam Schiff reading it and telling us, I think the American people deserve the right to see that. And then we go from there. But, Steve, it's just, it takes me back to the Bill Clinton impeachment proceedings where, there was no doubt that Bill Clinton made a mistake, and there was no doubt that the Republicans had kind of a something that they could jump on to try and exploit, but they overplayed their hand. And again, I think with the Mueller report's issuance, we've now left the legal discussion, and it is all a political discussion. It's all been a political discussion to a certain extent. But this is really now a political conversation. And with political conversations, there's a very delicate line that you've got to walk if you want to be successful.
Yeah, and I got to say, I don't buy into the fact that, the statement that a lot of people said over the weekend as well, that America doesn't care about this. America wasn't connected to this. This is all people were talking about when they got the news this weekend. They may not be connected on the same issue that you are or that I might be, but people do care about this. You've got little kids. I've got grown kids. What do you say to your kids? They're inheriting this country. What do you say to your kids when they go, wait, you mean he didn't do anything wrong? What's the answer?
It's a great point, Steve, and I, you know, there'll be history books written on the exact activities of Donald Trump prior to becoming president, during his time as president, and then what happens afterwards. And I don't know if we'll ever get the definitive answers to all of that, but to your broader point about whether or not people are talking about this and how much they care about it, I do think people care about it. I do think people want definitive answers. But from my time on the campaign trail, it's not the overwhelming point of conversation. You know, I've covered Bernie Sanders closely, obviously, but I've covered a number of the other candidates. Few of these 2020 candidates are bringing up the Mueller report at length during their conversations with voters. You know, they do attack Donald Trump. They attack him more on a personal and policy basis. So I do wonder how much this is a calculation in the average voter's minds. I don't think that Robert Mueller's issuance of this report is going to satisfy the concerns of people who think that Donald Trump is corrupt. I think that they're always going to think that. And I also think that if he had come out with something that said that Donald Trump did do something wrong, that his most hardcore supporters would have been convinced otherwise. So I think that this is almost kind of baked into people's perceptions already.
Yep.
And now we move on. Now I think it now becomes about the issues, hopefully. and then that's what's going to decide whether or not he wins and loses this next election.
Yeah, and whether or not he ought to be in the White House as the president beyond these next 2 years. And listen, I'll be the first to admit, I didn't think he'd last a year. I didn't think he'd last 2 years. But that's based on his behavior, the way he has treated the job and acted, the things he says, the things he tweets. It's not cute. It's not presidential. He's not my guy, but he is the president of the United States, and he did not collude with Russians. That was the primary question. We believe it's been answered. There may be a couple of surprises in the report, but anybody that wakes up this morning and is waiting for something that wasn't stated by Barr or released so far, there's no giant surprise coming, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and the other thing, too, I think we should point out, Steve, is that I think the reaction to this report is really indicative of the really smart communication strategy that the White House had. And I do think that it's President Trump that led this charge, probably against some of the advice of his advisors. And that was to narrow the scope of people's interest in this to just collusion. You know, he was able to crystallize that as the point of contention, and probably because he knew deep down that he didn't collude personally.
Right.
That he, you know, that,
right.
that
and how weird is that? The one thing he was telling the truth about was that.
Exactly. And so he knew, you know, he could continue to beat his chest on that point, ignore the obstruction of justice issues, ignore perhaps the corrupt business practices, ignore all these other things that will probably still be investigated on some level, and make the only thing that people cared about collusion. And then when this report comes out and he gets that line that specifically says he didn't collude, then he can declare victory. And then he can even take it a step further and say that he's been exonerated of all potential charges against him, which isn't actually true. So, you know, this was a winning communication strategy for Donald Trump. This is what he does better than anything else. And I think you see it starting to bear fruit.
Yeah, and the problem is politically, is one third of the country believes anything he says. Two thirds of the country thinks he shouldn't be there. The people in the middle, who may tend to waver back and forth a little bit, he could win them over right now. He could win over a good chunk of them right now, at least, by taking a completely different tact and not going on the attack, not claiming he was the victim here, and moving on and being the president. But I don't see that happening.
Well, I mean, that's always, you know, every time we've been waiting for the Trump pivot since he started running for president, and I think you're so right about that. That middle third of the country, and within that middle third, there's about half of those people that actually like some of his policies, that, you know, are immigration hawks, that do like what he did with taxes. They like the judges that he appointed. They probably don't like him personally. They don't like his tactics. They don't like his persona in general. But they kind of like the presidency in totality. So now they don't have to worry about collusion anymore. What does he do now over the next 18 months to grab that section of the country that is willing to support him on a policy level but is uncomfortable with him personally to convince them that he deserves another 4 years in office? I think that could make or break whether or not he wins re-election.
Ryan Noble, CNN, on the road with Bernie still this week?
Actually, I'm headed to Capitol Hill right now to see how Capitol Hill is going to respond to all this investigation. I think Bernie might roll out a new version of Medicare for All in the very near future, which will become a big talking point. So that's the next big thing with his campaign that we're focused on.
All right. Plenty to talk about, obviously, as we move on. Thank you, Ryan Nobles.
All right. Have a great one, guys.
That's Ryan Nobles from CNN, our pal who joins us weekly to talk about this stuff, and he's nothing but great. All right, look, Steve's going to tell you what comes up here at 8 o'clock, and then Dave will come back with me in a second. We'll give away some Blackhawks tickets, and we'll tell you what we're doing in the desert. Well, that sounded wrong.
Hawk a riddle, yeah, come on, and get your Blackhawk tickets, yeah.
Well, I prepared the John DeCoste riddle, Sandberg. What game are we giving away?
We are giving away a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks play the Winnipeg Jets next Monday, April 1st, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingandcooling.com. And we're giving away a second pair this afternoon with Rokan and Anna DeVlantis at 4:40, so be listening.
All right, here is the Hawk a riddle. You need to be the first correct person to answer what I'm talking about. I'll give you a hint here. This is a person. So tell me who this person is. 312-981-7200. You'll win those tickets. Born in 1927. Destined to play the fool. It's funny, he trained at our Goodman Drama School. Known for breaking up with a TC laughing spell. His best body of work came from both Carol and Mel. Who is it? Let me give it again because my rhythm was off. Born in 1927 and destined to play the fool, it's funny he trained at our Goodman Drama School. Known for breaking up with a TC laughing spell, his best body of work came from both Carol and Mel. Who am I talking about? 312-981-7200. Dave, what would you say your favorite part of the weekend was here in Arizona, where we still are in Phoenix this morning?
I'd say it's doing the show here in my room.
Well, you were both sitting in gym shorts and a T-shirt. Well, not the same T-shirt.
I think my favorite, well, it was great to be at Sox camp the last couple of days.
Yep.
Certainly enjoyed that. Had a great dinner last night with Big O at Tootie Santi.
It's going to be 85 next Sunday, by the way.
Yeah, and he looks great. It was great being with him and Gloria. And but I think, you know, play golf with you and Kevin.
The camaraderie.
Yeah, I just thought the sense of I was going to say sense of self-worth, but I didn't really come away with that.
Dave, who was in your cart, Dave, at the golf course?
It was Kevin on Saturday and Steve yesterday.
Yeah, we switched it up. Dave refused to ride with Roe. But, Dave, we had that fabulous sushi dinner on Friday night.
Oh, that was great. Great sushi spot that Steve found right down the street from our hotel. And Steve was very adventurous as far as trying. Mary, I don't know about you, but when I go to a sushi place, the first thing I think of is, let's order a steak.
No.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like Steve's kind of food.
I went to sushi.
Well, we had several rolls, but I had steak fried rice, and they literally serve you fried rice with a filet.
On top of it?
And then you can do whatever you want with the filet.
Vegas, he ordered some type of chicken at the sushi restaurant he took us to.
Well, what was interesting was watching him try to eat the filet with chopsticks.
Oh.
That did not go so well.
Stabbing it and tearing it apart. What was that crazy lobster roll that we had?
Oh, I can't remember what it was called, but it was really good. Yes.
Right.
The food's been pretty good. We had a great dinner here at the hotel on Saturday night with several of our advertisers and some of our salespeople, and that was great.
Oh, you want to hear a quick cool story? Our friend Mike Hillstrom went to high school with a girl who wouldn't give him the time of day. Mike is now, older.
He and I are the same age. Thanks,
Steve. He's a few years down the road. And he is single. The woman that wouldn't give him the time of day in high school is single. Can you see where this is going? They reconnected, I think, in December. Is that right? Yeah, they reconnected in December and are now happy as heck to be together as a couple and hanging out. Tons of fun. But all they had was 48 years in between him having no game and being turned down and now getting together as a couple. Not a cool story.
Yeah. Very cool.
Hey, Steve, Marco from the city had the right answer for the Hawker riddle. Harvey Korman was the answer, and they're going to go to see Winnipeg Jets take on, and the Blackhawks take on the Winnipeg Jets Monday, April 1st.
How is it that Dave, you and I were the only ones that were interested in the romance of that story? And
I'm not interested.
I know. It was like, you told nice tale of lost love, reconnecting.
It's 8:04. We have a break to take. We got to get to Dean for more on entertainment.
Yeah,
we
all that coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than one night.
More on entertainment. Bad news this morning as we start with Dean, live from Channel 9. We, of course, are in Phoenix, Arizona for a few more hours. And Dean, you have been found guilty of collusion with a Russian critic, apparently a theater critic.
I've been totally exonerated.
No, it says here that Vladimir poops a lot, and you have been somehow associated with each other. I don't know. I don't understand.
I may have spoken to him about my review of the Russian ballet, but we only had a brief conversation. Can't prove anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell it to your lawyer.
Collusion, delusion.
How was your weekend?
It was good. It was fun. It was a nice weekend. And I heard you talking about your big sushi dinner. I'm even shocked that you went into a sushi restaurant, to tell you the truth.
I have sushi occasionally. I usually go with my sister, who is a sushi expert. She's a sushi concierge. And she takes me to all the nice sushi places in town. I think we go to Sunda quite a bit, I think.
Do you have the raw fish, or do you have, cooked shrimp and chicken teriyaki and stuff like that?
I mix it up. Sometimes I go completely crazy and I'll have a California roll. So I'm pretty out there. No, I have what she orders, and she orders some wacky stuff, and I like it.
It's delicious. Yeah, it's delicious. I had a wonderful meal on the Saturday night at the Chicago Cut Steakhouse.
Oh, what'd you get, Dean?
Downtown. I had a big, beautiful strip steak, New York strip steak. It was delicious.
Did you get any sides?
yes. I love their grilled asparagus.
Yeah.
We had some whipped potatoes. I had a fantastic chopped salad.
Oh, I love their chopped salad. I got married there. I don't know if you remember
really?
That. Yeah, I know you guys weren't invited, but that's mm-hmm. where my wedding was. So
that's a beautiful restaurant.
It is.
Right on the river. It was a nice evening. It was great there.
Yeah, and who do you think the first person was to come up with that steakhouse scam of sides are a la carte? You know what I mean?
I mean it's
every other restaurant and every other restaurant in the world, they go, well, you could have this or that for sides. You go into a steakhouse, they roll out the asparagus like it's a special treat.
Right.
For $35.95. I'm not making fun of Cut here. I love Cut, but all steakhouses do this.
No, it's a good scam. And then you go to like neighborhood restaurants where you get soup and salad and dessert and everything is included at the same time. But always a spectacular meal at Chicago Cut. It's one of my favorite special occasion kind of restaurants.
Same, Dean. Was it a special occasion that you
it was?
There for?
No. Just getting together with some friends we haven't seen in a long time.
I always like to get the burger. I know that that's people, I think they're supposed to get, a really nice cut of meat, but
it's
their
a
burger
special
is,
burger
it's,
there.
It's incredible. I also ordered that on my wedding night. I had the burger.
You had a burger on your wedding night?
I did, Dean.
Nice.
I like it medium rare.
I like that.
Yeah,
it was. I like that. Almost everybody at the table had fillets, but they had an appetizer that was like a salmon tartare.
Yum.
That was, I don't even know how it was seasoned or prepared, but it was delicious.
That sounds delicious.
Here in the Valley, where there's 400,000 Chicagoans who like to see Chicago food, They opened at Portillo's by the Cubs spring training park a couple of years ago. I guess it was probably 2014. It was when we were out here then. And they now have a Portillo's in Scottsdale, which is backing people out the door. And they also have a Culver's. And Dave and I drove around last night. We couldn't find a Mr. Beef, but we're sure there is one.
There's a Lou Malnati's in Scottsdale, yeah. I believe, yep. also. But, you know, my brother lived in Phoenix for a very long time. There's a place you would drive by it and not even notice it called Chicago Hamburger Company. It's on Indian Trail.
Indian Wells.
Indian School Road. Indian School Road. And it's, you know, all typical, very Chicago-style foods. But the best part is they have Chicago memorabilia all over the restaurant, including, like, a wall of WGN stuff. I was waiting in line to place my order, and I look up, and it's like, oh, I'm on the wall. How did I get on this wall?
Funny.
It's like a WGN wall that they have there.
Was I on the wall?
You are not on the wall.
Steve, did you guys stop at Culver's for a cement mixer?
We did not. No, we didn't have time.
My favorite.
You turn Dave's microphone on, will you? Because Dave was just making a point.
Oh,
what was your point, Dave?
No, I was just saying that you are on the wall at Tutti Santi.
Oh, that's right.
A picture of you and me and Andrea and Big O and
John Sost,
and we're holding a picture of Ron Santo.
Aww. Right.
And right, Ronnie. We took that picture 5 years ago.
And Santo actually found that restaurant and turned Orient and Gloria into it, and they are there apparently more often than the owner because they love it. So, and by the way, Dean, Orient turns 85 on Sunday.
Wow, I know. We have the same birthday, Orient.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm also turning 85.
And both of you look good.
Thank you. My wife and Gloria and I also go to Jameson frequently.
You know, I got to give credit to is Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell is 30 years old. Kevin Powell is hanging out a good portion of this weekend with Rokan, Dave Ennett, and I. He's 30 years old, and Rokan, Dave Ennett, and I are a combined 174 or something. And Kevin actually acted like he was interested.
Kevin is the oldest.
Yes, he's the old soul.
Old man, 30-year-old you're ever going to meet.
Mm-hmm. There's no question. I mean, we had dinner at one point, and he got up, and he went, oh, my back. Oh, God, I can't sit like that.
He really does
is
that.
Is he 30? Really?
I think he's 30, yeah. 29 or 30.
Grow-ups.
Might be 29.
So fast.
Steve, don't you think because Kevin was formerly your producer and my producer, don't you think that we just trained him properly how to be an old man?
Yeah, that's true. He watched us. There's
future no moron in training. He's a future moron in training as far as I'm concerned.
He's going to need another moron because after you and I are dead, he's got to have a partner on a moron.
No, there's plenty of morons to go around. Don't worry.
Oh, I don't know. Not of this quality. Coming up, Dr. Dre, the Kids' Choice Awards, box office news from the weekend, and TV news about the Conners and Supernatural and Schitt's Creek. And no, I didn't just curse.
Excuse me?
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
Back live from Phoenix, Arizona.
And the northwest side of
the
Chicago.
Minibar.
Dean.
What was in the minibar?
I grabbed, now keep in mind I've been up for 3 hours, I grabbed a Diet Coke and the Famous Amos bite-sized chocolate chip cookies.
Yes.
$475 right there.
It's surprisingly reasonable. I mean, the Diet Coke was $350 and the Famous Amos are $325, so that's only $675, which isn't bad. Now you can get a $22 bottle of wine in there. Mm-hmm. Which isn't bad. Dave's not bad.
What's Dave going to do?
By the way, this is my mini bar. This is going on my bill. I would just like to point that out. So help yourself, Steve.
Yeah, Canadian whiskey, one of the mini bottles, $7.95. This seems a tad pricey. Beef jerky, $6.25.
Now, hey, Steve.
Beef jerky's expensive for some reason.
Who approves? Now, Dave is a manager. You're not a manager, so someone has to approve your expenses. But does Dave approve his own expenses?
That's a good point. I don't know. And
honestly,
do you think I'm too worried about the cookies? I'm really not.
he doesn't seem to be, as he's taking another one out of the bag. No, Mr. Manley approves mine.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sure he won't have a problem with Steve's Famous Amos and Diet Coke.
Those Famous Amos cookies are delicious.
Oh, they are, aren't they? I almost bought a big box of them the other day at the grocery store, but then I thought I could pound that in one sitting.
In a gallon of milk.
Steve is nodding in agreement, by the way, because he has
I was going to bring them back to you, but I only have one left.
Oh.
All right, what's that? Why is Dr. Dre in the news?
So Dr. Dre over the weekend posted something on Instagram in which he was sort of bragging about his daughter who goes to University of Southern California, which is ground zero for the college scandals, the admissions scandals there. He posted something that said, "My daughter got accepted into USC all on her own, no jail time."
Oh, nice.
Kind of making fun of the whole scandal. But then the next day, somebody revealed that Dr. Dre and his producer, Jimmy Iovine, made a $70 million donation to USC to establish an arts, technology, and business school.
Well, how did she possibly get in
that? Named after them. Yeah. It's just a coincidence that dad makes this huge donation. Dr. Dre took the post off of Instagram.
And Beats by Dr. Dre is where he made most of his money.
Yeah, and remember, if you watch that documentary, he got in trouble for kind of outing his deal with Beats early. Like, he's got a little bit of impulse control that way.
Hard to believe. NWA, they were such stable guys.
I read this article over the weekend about people like Meryl Streep, and the list went on and on of huge celebrities that have donated millions and millions of dollars to different schools where their children attended. There's no proof that that's what got their children into school. In many cases, the donations were made after their children were out of the school. But lots of people with money and power do that kind of thing.
Just I gotta tell you,
probably not a good idea to go on Instagram and bragging about it, though.
No, not great, unless your tracks are covered. I donated $500 to the Red Wing School of Shoe Repair, and Ross decided not to go there. So I was still kind of upset about that.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure I could have gotten him in.
I made a big donation to the barber college in my neighborhood.
Right.
Just in case anyone wants to get into haircutting, I've got an in for you.
Jordan Peele's movie Us made a bunch of money, but the Kids' Choice Awards is big news.
Yeah,
did you win one?
I did not. I would like to go. I'd like to be up for one and win, and of course get slimed, because that's the big deal when you go to the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards. DJ Khaled got slimed. Chris Pratt got slimed. Just about everybody who got up there did.
Adam Sandler got a full slime.
Sandler got a huge sliming. They love that. And then they turn on the
Robert
slime
Mueller
machine.
Robert Mueller got slimed.
The people like in the first 10 rows were soaked with this stuff that was shooting like Buckingham Fountain all over the theater. Avengers Infinity War won Best Movie. Riverdale won Best TV Show. And the Fuller House one favorite funny TV show.
How about that?
Aunt Becky.
And
TV show.
And in their acceptance speech, they were kind of like, family stick together even through the tough times. Like, they were sending the messages out to Lori.
Yeah. We're mocking you, Nickelodeon Kids TV Awards.
Hey, Dean.
By the way, the tough time family thing totally is relatable, because I noticed this weekend that Lori Loughran and her husband, Massimo Giannulli, the fashion designer, they had to put up, I'm going to get a little choked up even talking about this, to make their $500,000 per bail for each one of them, they had to put up their $35 million Hollywood mansion as collateral. And God bless them for the work they're doing.
I don't know how people can live like that.
Steve, so. I just want to let you know that Ellen's Game of Games show won favorite game show.
Right.
So the kids don't hate it like you do.
Yep, the kids love the cruelty.
Also, speaking of cruelty or anti-cruelty, do both of you, there was an award for How Do You Want to Help, asking kids how they want to help. You could pick.
They said we don't.
I know. You could help people in need. You could help schools. Mm-hmm. You could help the environment. You could help animals. And you could help prevent bullying. Which one won?
What was
the last one?
Help prevent bullying.
Mm. I think they went with none of the above because they were busy doing other stuff they wanted to do.
Like I was getting a tattoo, so I didn't hear the question.
I was on the Insta, so I don't really care to help right now.
You're talking about the millennial group. These are younger kids, but they want to have animals. So they put animals above people, school, environment, everything. Animals, I feel like animals are king right now, and that's consistent with the young people.
I would have guessed bullying.
Yeah, no, they want animals.
I am trying to stop cat bullying of dogs. I'm completely tired of seeing cats bully dogs, and don't act like it doesn't happen. All right, lightning round time here. Connor's making it or not on TV?
Renewed for a second season. It's the number one comedy in America.
Oh, yeah. I love that show.
Easily Supernatural, succeeded in or out. Without Roseanne. Supernatural, its next season will be its final season after 15 seasons.
And Eugene Levy, Levy's Schitt's Creek. Is that coming or going?
It is one more season. It'll be their sixth, and then they say that they're going to call it quits as well, which is a shame because it is a funny, funny show. And just fun to say Schitt's Creek, too.
Yeah. Okay, well, remember the episode where they had the Shih Tzu? They had the Shih Tzu get loose on Schitt's Creek. Remember that?
The dump button's broken, by the way. Can't use the dump button anymore.
The sugar in Steve's famous cookies are kicking in.
I'm going to have another one while we take this break. That's more on entertainment. Superstar Dean Richards, and we'll be back tomorrow for more, Dean.
I will be here. Where will you be?
We'll be back. We'll be back. We'll be at O'Hare this afternoon at 5. I'm making an appearance at the luggage situation, picking up my bag.
I'm going to meet you there with flowers and pretend like I'm crying at the gate. I'm going to meet you there like you've been gone on a 5-month-long European trip.
What if I run and leap into your arms?
It's going to be like Dirty Dancing. It's going to be like the dancing and Dirty Dancing.
This is why Kevin doesn't like us. All right, we'll talk to you later. And we're back with the headlines next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
There is a nerd website for lawyers called lawandcrime.com, which lays out pretty clearly the fundamental problem with the Attorney General Barr's no obstruction conclusion. And Steve Grzanich in the newsroom, you know, can be summed up pretty quickly. So Robert Mueller and his team of 19 lawyers and 40 FBI agents spent 22 months getting 2,800 subpoenas and 500 search warrants, interviewed 500 witnesses before concluding on whether Trump should be charged with collusion / a conspiracy to influence the 2016 election. But AG Barr and Rod Rosenstein decided to nix any concerns about obstruction in two afternoons this weekend, basically one Saturday.
Yeah.
So that's why the people are upset. That's why people want to see the full report more than anything else. It doesn't make sense that Barr could have gotten the report, read it, and just said, yeah, there's nothing here.
Yeah, and Steve, you know, I think it also, we should also say that the Mueller investigation did find quite a bit. Here are the numbers. 34 people were indicted. 3 business entities were indicted. That's a total of 37. There were 6 Trump associates who have been charged with making false statements either to Congress or federal investigators. 7 guilty pleas. 5 people sentenced to prison. 1 person found guilty at trial. So those are pretty big numbers for the special counsel.
There are 14, this is more of the law and crime piece, there are 14 federal statutes that criminalize actions, any of which constitutes obstruction of justice. Of those 14, the one most likely relevant to Trump would be one of your favorites, Steve. It's 18 U.S.C. 1512.
Yeah.
You know that
one. Yeah, I know that one, right.
I think he has a t-shirt that says that.
And a bumper sticker. It would be a good t-shirt, actually. It's tampering with a witness, victim, or an informant. It prohibits, quote, whoever corruptly alters, destroys, mutilates, conceals a record, document, or other object, or attempts to do so with the intent to impair the object's integrity or availability for use in an official proceeding, or 2, otherwise obstructs, influence, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so. We all sat and watched Lester Holt talking to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump said, I fired Comey regardless of what Rod Rosenstein was going to say. I made the decision. I fired him because of this Russia thing. And then the next day, he met a couple of Russians in the Oval Office, told them the same thing, which was widely reported in Russian media. That's the part that's confusing to the rest of us. I get that Mueller did his job, and he should be thanked for the job that he did. But Barr and Rosenstein have to explain how Mueller worked 22 months and they worked 22 hours. And they came up with the conclusions they came up with. So that's the part that's hard to fathom, amongst the many other questions that are out there. What we do need to move along with is that Trump's not going to jail, at least not anytime while he's in the White House. And none of his kids or associates or anything else. And the best thing we can do is accept that he's president of the United States and move forward while holding him to the standard that he ought to be held to because of the office that he holds. I don't know what else to add to it at this point. And I've not seen any of the texts this morning because we're sitting in a hotel room in Arizona. Are the text messages shocked, Sandberg, surprised, angry? What are the you don't have to read them, but what's the general consensus?
Wouldn't you like to know? They mostly people say that he's, see, you were wrong, Steve. That's what they say.
And well, I figured there'd be a general consensus of that.
Yeah, but they the text messages are that now we can move on, basically. So, but as we keep, it's really hard to move on. Just... Not innocent, but not guilty. It seems gray, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's an incredibly frustrating finding. Listen, I have been completely consistent in two things. One, I don't like Donald Trump, and I think he's a terrible president. But the other thing I've been consistent in is this is about the country being protected against another country interfering with our election. And that's exactly what Russia did. And we've done very little about it.
You know,
and that's
what
I want to hear the president talk about it today.
I don't know if Pat Brady covered this. if this wasn't the president, if this was someone else that this report was about, would it be the same finding?
Yeah, I don't think it would be because of the rule about the president, the policy about the president not being indicted. I think Donald Trump is the Houdini of all Houdinis in how he continues to escape incredibly bad behavior. And again, the ironic thing here, well, there's many ironies, but one of the big ones is that the one thing he's been telling the truth about amongst all the lies is that he did not collude with the Russians. How about that? Who saw that coming? Raise your hand if you did. You are lying because nobody saw that coming.
Steve, and the reason I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation all of the numbers of what Mueller did in this investigation, the number of indictments, the number of people, I wonder how we would have viewed Friday differently, the weekend's developments differently, had all of those indictments been announced on Friday with this report.
Hmm. It's an interesting point.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it.
Would we have taken this more seriously? Would it have been, you know, bigger deal? Would the Trump side be, you know, claiming victory and doing its lap, its dance? I wonder.
What do we expect today? Where is the story going to go today? Obviously, the report is not going to be issued completely today. The Democrats have to decide if they're going to lose their minds and, you know, start screaming impeachment or come down somewhere in between. You know, and just ride out this last year and a half of the Trump presidency and see what they have. But right now they've got 145 people running for president, and there's no clear picture of who's in charge of the Democratic Party either. America deserves better. They deserve better behavior from the president. They deserve better than the two-party choices we have because they both suck.
Yeah, and Steve, there are a couple of interesting items this morning with this. One is Robert Mueller has reported to work this morning to his office. We've had people see him go in, reporters see him go in. The other thing is
this like a Kramer thing where he doesn't know the job's over and he keeps showing up?
You know, and he's probably there to, you know, wrap up loose ends. And then the other thing is the U.S. Supreme Court has decided this morning that it's not going to hear a case involving a company that was subpoenaed by Mueller that had been fighting that subpoena, was being fined about $50,000 a day for violating the subpoena. So it's interesting. What is that case about? How is it connected to all of this? Will it move forward? Will we hear anything more about that? Interesting development on that front.
We will come back in a couple of minutes. There's an interesting story here in Phoenix that is making some news. And it's a legal story, but let me just give you the headline. Man must let his ex use his sperm to get her pregnant and pay child support, according to a ruling by another court. Stand by for that in a moment.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hey, this is the Steve Cochran Show, and while Steve is getting adjusted in the hotel room with Dave... I'm going to give away a pair of
tickets. I don't think I'm ever going to be fully adjusted.
That did not sound right.
I know. It came out really bad.
Especially when boxer shorts were involved.
I know. I'm going to give
I understand this this microphone sounds funky. Is that any better now?
You know when we really notice it is when Dave talks as well, because Dave sounds very clear. So Dave, actually, Dave gave you the worst mic is what it seems like. Is that possible?
I don't know.
This is the mic that I brought with me from Chicago.
Steve,
I didn't switch mics on, Steve.
Steve, can you use your broadcaster voice like Dave? Like your?
Well, I could if I wanted to.
Maybe that's what
But he's
it
chewing
is.
Famous yeah. Amos cookies.
Hey, I'm going to give away a pair of tickets to the Howie Mandel performing live at Silver Creek Event Center on Saturday, April 13th. Seventh caller, get tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Howie Mandel live at Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape.
All right, so there's a story out here that caught my eye because it was repeated quite a few times, and the headline, frankly, is, you know, not something you see every day. Man must let his ex use sperm to get pregnant and pay child support, according to a court rule. A woman's desire to get pregnant using the fertilized embryos of her former partner outweighs his interest in avoiding procreation, so says the Arizona Code of, the Arizona Court of Appeals. After Ruby Torres was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2014, she and now ex-husband John Terrell preserved embryos in the event that the chemotherapy she'd have to undergo would prevent her from being able to bear children. Terrell later asked the Maricopa County Superior Court during the couple's divorce proceedings to preclude Torres from impregnating herself with the embryo in the embryos. Now in a 2-1 decision, the appeals court overturned all of it, and he is going to have to pay child support for a child he didn't want to see be created in the first place. Your thoughts?
How is that possible?
Exactly.
Should have put something in the prenup.
Probably shouldn't have put any sperm in the test tube.
Yeah, that too.
Well, because how are they? Do they say why that it's being allowed?
The initial thing I said at the top, which was a woman's desire to get pregnant utilizing fertilized embryos outweighs his decision to avoid procreation.
Oh, because it's in her embryo. It's already been fertilized. I see.
But this is the big question in general, right? Because if a man and woman hook up and the woman gets pregnant and she wants to have the baby and the guy does not want to have the baby. Let's not get into abortion here. I'm not advocating abortion. But a man doesn't have that decision. And I understand why. But in this case, the idea that he's going to have to pay child support for a child that he doesn't think should be created beyond where they are now, it's kind of ridiculous, I think.
And who is paying for when they're frozen? Isn't there a cost to keep embryos frozen at all times?
There must be.
On the site? Yeah. I mean, who is paying for all that?
I don't know. You got to pay for GoDaddy to hold your domain name, so there must be somebody paying for this.
Exactly. Yeah,
and what happens later if the dad suddenly decides he does want to have contact with the child? Will he have any parental rights?
Well, he should if he's paying child support.
You would hope,
right? That's for sure.
Yeah, you would hope. It's an interesting choice by the woman, right? Because she's divorced from the man. I would think she wouldn't want to have a child created with this man, and she'd want to go off and find other options if those are still available to her.
Yeah, go
but
to that's a sperm bank or something. Right, you know?
Well, if these are fertilized already, though, she may not have more eggs to give.
Yeah, that's
like, that
point.
Might be her only. She might have, you know, that's all that she's got left. And so that's why. She may not even care that it's his, just that's what she already has to work with.
She just wants a baby more.
He may also be really good looking and be very smart.
Yes.
Yeah. Could be.
You know, and
as opposed to playing the crapshoot of going to the sperm
exactly,
bank.
Right, yeah.
Well, usually you get a profile, I believe, if you go to one of those banks. They give you the, you know.
But isn't it like dating, where the pictures always are better than the one that shows up at the Applebee's?
It could very well be. And I don't know how strongly they vet them. Like, you could lie. Like Steve, if you went and did a donation, you could, you know, you say you played football, but that was in high school, but you don't have to specify it was in high school.
Oh, did I say played football? Right. I meant I saw a football game.
You know what I mean? Actually, you could put you're a really good golfer. That would be so. There's women in there looking
That's
for
quite a catch for the ladies.
I don't have any firsthand experience with this, but my understanding is they do genetic testing and they do all kinds of like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think in some of these places, I think they even do like IQ testing and health testing and all kinds of stuff before they let you donate.
So, Grzanich, are you implying that Steve Cochran would not pass the genetic and IQ testing for
donation? No, I'm not saying that at all.
Hey, I went to college for a year. Come on.
I just read a People magazine article about a sperm donor who just married one of the women who had a kid with him. Oh, yeah, and the guy's got like 20 kids, and he's meeting all of them now. So he's having relationships with all
movie?
These kids.
This is
was
straight out of
movie?
I don't know.
It's
Legally Blonde.
It was in People magazine. It's awesome.
Steve, in Legally Blonde, she argues that if a guy is going to have wants contact with one of his kids, he should want to have contact with every sperm emission he had throughout his whole sex career. You know, so.
But this was a bad career. Vince Vaughn movie.
Oh, sex you're right. Career.
Was a bad Vince Vaughn movie where he actually was a sperm donor, that's how he made money, and he went off and he had to meet like all 50 of his kids or something.
Oh, that's right.
Let's see. Yeah. I'm looking it up. Vince Vaughn sperm donation.
Vaughn bad sperm donor movie.
It's called Delivery Man.
Click on the images tab and see what you get.
Delivery Man.
Oh.
Delivery Man, that's it. That's it.
533 kids.
Now, guess what you're going to get because of the analytics of that search flooding your inbox for the rest of the day?
I've been blocked here at work, not safe anymore.
There should be a limit to how much sperm you can donate, because otherwise you have an overpopulation of the same person, and that'll lead to
There is a limit. It's called aging.
Tell that to Tony Randall.
And the size of the cup.
That's a good point.
Okay, Grzanich. All right.
Oh, boy. 312-981-7200 is the telephone number for you texters who still want to tell me what an idiot I am. Feel free to chime in there. And we'll take up some of that either next hour or tomorrow when I get back. And in the meantime, we continue live from the desert. Dave will have the sports next from Phoenix. And Dave wants to tell people how excited Ed was to have me and Rokan and me on the broadcast yesterday.
I think he was thrilled.
I think that's the word. No, actually, once we started, it was great.
Hey,
it wasn't so wild in the beginning.
I'm not sure what's happening, but it sounds like you have your cheeks pressed up against each other and the microphone in between them or something.
You're a little out of breath.
Okay, I'll back off.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
The shallow, shallow.
I knew it was going to happen sometime.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
All right, we got in a little technical snafu, but we're back now, and I believe we're snafu-free for the moment as we continue to finish the weekend here. Dave, your sportscast went down in flaming glory. I think you got most of the information out during the newscast.
Hey, Steve, we're going to have to reconnect. We have to reconnect, you guys.
Go gargle in the shower. Sounds like that's what you're doing.
They're gargling for sure. So in the meantime, Mary, I don't know if you saw in the Sun-Times over the weekend, they said that J.B. Pritzker has on his calendar every day what he's supposed to wear.
Oh.
So that he knows, because otherwise he would always just wear a suit and tie, and they need him to sometimes look more like a relatable human. So
doesn't his wife put out his clothes for him?
No, I don't think... I don't think his wife does, but his it'll say something like polo with Columbia jacket, no tie.
Oh, my God. So wait, who's writing this stuff?
Apparently a team of people. There's an image consultant.
Image people.
Yeah, his image people. They said that many executives have a team of people that decide what somebody's going to wear, and it's being efficient. So he can just look at his calendar and say, oh, no, I'm not supposed to be in a suit today. I'm supposed to be in khakis and a Columbia jacket.
Well, does he do any sporting activities or anything? Does he golf?
I don't know what his, if he does a, Grzanich, do you know, does J.B. Pritzker play golf?
I'm sure he does. I mean, don't all rich people play golf?
I can't imagine him in some little short khaki pants, though.
Yeah, no, but he does do outdoor stuff with, voters and things. Yeah. Stand out there.
And I have to tell you, from a man's point of view, if I had the money, I would love to do something like this. First of all, I would love to have a team of people help me pick out clothing.
Well, why don't you join Stitch Fix? Do they do it for men?
I don't know.
They need
do
to
not.
Do Stitch Fix for
men. But
then
to have somebody tell you exactly what you're going to wear every day and kind of match it up and lay it out together and dress. I mean, I would love that.
Mary, I thought your dog did that for you.
Mara, I love
that. Most of the time, I do it in the dark in the morning at 3:30.
Steve Grzanich has a great method. He finds a shirt he likes and then buys it in every color possible.
Right.
the exact same shirt.
Because it fits him well. Looks good.
Yeah, they're different. It has different patterns and stuff, but generally like the same brand of shirt and the same style.
You're not colorblind, are you?
No. Okay. And then I, you know, buy seven of them.
Yeah, and then you get the like the short sleeve version for the summer. Yeah. You look good in blue. Your mom and I both agree. We like to see you in the blues.
And I like green. Green is also a good color, apparently.
You like plaids. Yeah. You wear a lot of plaids.
Yeah, yeah, he's wearing plaid right now. I can see him. Everyone on CLTV can see him, too.
But I don't know about you guys, but I lay all my clothes out the night before.
I do, too.
See, I have to.
I'm not that anal.
Well, because Murrow probably doesn't yell at you about lights, but I share a bedroom with
my
husband.
The husbands we have to deal with.
Yeah, and so I can't be rifling through the closet in the morning. Yeah. But because I lay out my clothes in the night, or, you know, the night before, I pick the same five things. Because I at night, I'm not in the mood to be creative about, you know, what's coming next. So I pick the same gray, black, and cream.
Oh, you just don't know how you're going to feel in the morning.
Yeah, so I can't be like, what if I'm not feeling cute enough for that pink shirt? I better just lay out a black sweater. Just, you know what I mean?
Plus, if you had a glass of wine the night before, you might pick out something really obnoxious and then go, well, you wake up.
So, Mary, you and I are a lot alike in that regard, that we have about five different things that we like to wear. Yeah.
I do. I don't actually buy five of the same color, the exact same thing, but I do have a handfuls of V-neck black sweaters. They're all different, that people will think that I'm doing the same thing, but they're all different, and I can show you the label to prove it if that's what you need to see.
I believe you. I believe you.
We're live in Phoenix. Can you hear us any better?
We can, Steve. You sound great.
How was your Listerine?
Yeah, you know, it's the miracle of technology. Dave's string tied to his Dixie cup is just broken.
Uh-oh.
So, but we think we're going to be able to pull this off the rest of the way. David Hochberg checked in a few moments ago. He said, doesn't matter what he wears. None of you guys like it at all.
This is true. I mean, Steve, remember the one time he showed up at the studio here wearing his spin cycle shoes? Because he forgot to bring shoes for
Peloton
summer.
Shoes?
Yeah.
It's funnier than you know, unless you know David Hochberg.
Steve, did you hear that J.B. Pritzker puts on his calendar what he's supposed to wear that day? So that he knows if he should be in a suit or if he should be in a polo and Columbia jacket and khakis to look more relatable.
Yeah, was he doing this before he was elected?
No, this is first few weeks since he's been in office. They had to start putting him down that path.
See, I'm more concerned about him surviving the stress of the office at the weight he's at. And I would love to see him just get on a program where he's dropping some weight so he's healthier, as opposed to making sure his khakis are on the proper khaki day.
Well, they didn't say any. The story did not get into what his workout plan is or his diet, just the when he wants to look more like a regular person, or if he wants to wear the suit and tie. So
it's ridiculous.
Well, Steve, you can become his trainer because you look great.
Yeah, Steve, you've got the.
Thanks.
Get him
thanks.
To start wearing the jeans, just like you.
Maybe he's got to get TMJ, and then he can eat.
Oh,
yeah, you know the TMJ. The TMJ didn't help, but actually, it started a while before that. Again, I'll give you the secret. A secret. Write this down. Eat less, move more. Even if you're having Famous Amos cookies for breakfast in Phoenix, move more later today to take care of the problem. Say, walk through an airport a couple times really briskly.
There you go.
all right, so we think we're good. Come back in a few minutes.
We're talking baseball. Klazuski, Campanella, talking baseball. The man and Bobby Feller, the scooter, the barber and the nuke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque, especially Willie, Mickey, and the Duke.
Yesterday at Sox Park, Dave, what do they call the White Sox spring training facility?
Camelback Ranch.
Yesterday, Camelback Ranch. A couple things stood out. One, when you go into the gift shop, the souvenir shop, the swag shop, 99% of it is Dodger memorabilia. So we need to get more Sox stuff in there for next spring. I got a cool new Sox hat at a record price. I have never paid more for a hat. I paid $40 for a Sox hat.
What does it look like?
It looks like a Sox hat.
Is it just a standard black?
Is it lined in gold?
Right. What's the perk on it that caused it to be $40?
I think it's $40 because it was at the park, but it's got the cool baseball man logo, and it's fitted. But for $40, you know, someone else should have to wear it for me and tell me how great it is.
If it's fitted, is it you had to get the bigger size?
Well, the LXL, in a lot of times with a fitted hat, an LXL isn't big enough for my XL head, because really I got a double XL melon, and this one happened to work out. But we had some confusion at the beginning of the broadcast, because Rokon and I were supposed to initially do an inning of the game, because we thought the fans would find that highly amusing. And it turns out that Ed Farmer and DJ, our White Sox baseball guys, they didn't know that was going to happen. And because they're professionals, they preferred to do the game themselves. So Ed had just gotten in that morning, and DJ, they have a crazy schedule. Ed lives in Southern California. DJ lives in Seattle. And they fly in Sunday morning. They do the game, then they fly home Sunday night. And they've done that three or four times to Seattle this spring. Ed does it even more regularly. He's just getting over it, not feeling well, so he had a reason to be a little cranky. But then Ro and I showed up in the booth, and we had a little bit of confusion because I didn't know he had felt like he had the flu. So I saw Ed. I reached out. I shook his hand. He goes, "Wash your hands." I said, "What? What are you talking about? I wash my hands. You thought you wanted to shake my hand?" He goes, No. I thought you had, I thought I had the flu." And then he took out a bottle of hand sanitizer, and he squirts it in my hands, and he goes, "Now listen to me. Start at your wrist and work to your fingertips. Nobody knows how to do this right." So he was teaching me how to use hand sanitizer on my hands. So we got off to a rough start, but I've known Ed for 20 years plus. We're pals. And after that, we had a great time. I don't know if anybody heard it, but we had two fun-filled innings where Ro and I asked questions of DJ and Ed. We talked a little life, talked a little baseball, and I'm excited for the White Sox season because I think they're going to have an awful lot of fun on the air along with Andy Mazur and our other baseball guys, and it'll be it's going to be a good season. And we talked about how many wins it might take to win the division. Dave, I don't know where you are on this, but generally consensus in the booth was 87 or 88 could win the Central. And if the Cleveland Indians have more injury problems than they already had in spring, maybe it's less than that. So the Sox are going to be better and maybe a lot better. How's that for excitement, huh? Are you giddy? Are you tingly?
Hey, Steve. So I've visited Ed and DJ in the booth here at Guaranteed Rate, and one thing that Ed always does is he forces food on me. Were any snacks forced on you when you guys were in the booth?
He's a candy guy.
Yeah.
He always has chocolate in front of him, even though he weighs about 47 pounds. And, yeah, he insisted that we take a Kit Kat, and then I had to remind him he had the flu. So, you know, was the whole thing. But I saw a lot of great people from Chicago at the Sox game on both days, Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, we've had fun out here. But we're looking forward to coming home. We'll be home this afternoon, and Dave and I will be making, again, an exclusive appearance at the O'Hare Baggage Claim sometime around 5:30, waiting for our golf clubs.
Well, that should be a fun time to go to Naperville.
Yeah, we're not picking you up either.
Yeah, 5:30.
Uber it.
That's like the busiest time to be at the airport.
Uber it.
And, yep. Steve, just a quick note regarding the merchandise. On Saturday, that was a home game for the Dodgers. The Dodgers and White Sox share a complex in Arizona. So the reason you were seeing a bunch of Dodgers memorabilia is probably because it was a Dodgers home game, not a White Sox.
You know, I thought about that, but the actual permanent standing store is different than the merch in the concourse. So the standing store had all this Dodger stuff, and there's really no storage in the store, so they would have to roll all these Dodger racks out and roll White Sox racks in on a home game. Maybe they do that. I don't know.
Yeah, they do that at the United Center for the Bulls-Hawks, you know. You see them right at the end of a game start taking that stuff down to switch it out. It's like it's a real operation.
It's a production. Yeah. Well, I got into a little bit of trouble because I just started taking Dodger crap and throwing it outside. And they had an issue with that, which I thought was unfortunate. But it won't be long, kids. Is Thursday the opener? Is that right?
Thursday's the season opener. And then the following Thursday is the home opener.
All right, so Thursday's the opener in Cleveland. A week from Thursday, we'll be at the park for the opener, and then a cork and carry all day with everybody else and all the other shows. Ed Farmer's going to join us every Thursday, right?
Yeah, every Thursday, except for the Thursdays we tell him not to join us.
Right.
And I say that only because you might pepper somebody in occasionally. Just depends on time, that's all.
Yeah, and just so you know, because you're good friends with Ed, Ed, just when we were leaving the booth, said, "So, Steve, I'll talk to you Thursday afternoon." So he's obviously locked in. So you're going to need to call him and remind him.
I like thinking of Ed just calling you on your cell, though, and just talking to you while you drive.
Yeah, just give me a call. We'll catch up, Ed. But don't worry about Ed. He says the flu's over and he's feeling better, so we're counting on that. All right, we'll take a break, come back with your headlines.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Hi, first time caller, long time listener.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
Listen, we've had technical problems on and off all morning from here, and we need to be better than this, so let me apologize for that. But in the meantime, in the last few minutes of the program, Sandberg, you, Mary, Steve, and Dave, who for some reason can be heard on the same microphone headphone that I couldn't be heard on, will take it from here, and I'll check back in with you for a few minutes. And Sandberg, I believe you have a guest.
All right. Yes, we do. Author and lecturer and historian Louise W. Knight is in studio. She has written two biographies for Jane Addams. Back in 2005, she wrote Citizen, Jane Addams, and the Struggle for Democracy. And then now you have Jane Addams, Spirit in Action. And it's the first full-life biography of Jane Addams, isn't that correct?
Yes.
And when you set out to write the first book in 2005, did you know it was going to be incomplete in that you were only covering her formative years?
I have to confess. Well, I originally thought I was going to write in the first book a whole life, but it broke in half. I realized I had too much to say about the first half of her life. But then when I thought about writing what would have been volume two, I decided against that because the nature of the story changes completely. The biographers want to focus on the growth of character, how they change. And in the first half of her life, she's doing a lot of growing and there's a lot of stuff to work with to figure out what's going on in her earliest writings, letters, etc. In the second half of her life, she's a national and international figure. She's playing a major role in a lot of historic events, but you can't track the growth. So it was a different story, and I didn't think I could do a whole volume on that. So I changed my plan and decided I needed to write a short full life because none had been written, and so that's what the second book was. None had been written lately.
Sure. Okay. So you couldn't track the growth. Why? Because her letters didn't reflect that?
Yeah, her letters were much more businesslike. Her letters were about, you know, what are we going to do about this bill in Congress? She was not exploring her inner wrestlings anymore. And also her ideas had gelled a whole lot more. The first book ends with where her ideas were when she was 40-ish years old.
Okay.
And after that, although I'm sure her ideas did change and grow a little bit, not as much. So I just felt it was a different kind of story and it didn't merit doing in the same in-depth.
Now, I always wonder, somebody like her, did she realize any satisfaction from the efforts she was putting in and the changes she was making while she was doing it? Or is it something we can only appreciate now looking back at it?
That is a great question. And it's one that biographers often ask themselves as well. And I would say, I've gotten to know some of today's social activists since writing the book, and I'm always thinking about that question, you know, how much satisfaction are they getting? And what they've told me, and which I'm sure was also true for Addams, is that it's all in the effort. Okay. Because a lot of times they don't get there while they're alive. The goal they set that they work towards,
sure.
Like women getting the vote. Addams did get there, thank goodness. But all the suffragists who worked long decades before that, like Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, never got there. But they say it's the friendships they form. It's the working side by side. It's the shared commitment that gives the pleasure. And so even though the child labor movement that Addams worked on from 1893 until her death, it wasn't actually permanently achieved until after she died. But they were devoted to each other's combined efforts to make it happen, and that was the satisfaction.
Okay, now you are going to be at a meet and greet and a book signing this Friday, correct?
Friday.
At the St. Jane Hotel, where you're going to offer insight on your biography for the hotel's namesake, and then you're going to talk about more in depth about her. Do you continue to learn about her, even though you've written two books? Like, is there more to know or insight that you can gain from other people?
Yeah, and where do you get all your information all about her besides letters?
Well, her writings, if you study them very carefully, are very revealing. And I would say, to answer your question also, that a lot of times what you figure out that's new is from rereading something she wrote that you've already read probably 20 times.
Some inside clues she gives.
Well, perhaps. It's like you've learned certain things
Journals,
along the way,
yeah.
and then you read what she wrote again, and you go, oh, now I understand what's going on there. So, yeah, it's a very satisfying process to study someone's work and life and mind, because if they're complicated and rich thinkers. So I have continued to learn about her since then. I've given talks, you know, where I find myself saying things I hadn't even figured out in either book.
There, I like what you said, that if you're an enriched thinker, you know, there's some go down the path of some people that you look into and it says they actually were vacant or didn't offer much. Is there parts of her that, you know, she did amazing things and she's a strong woman and she was doing this tireless work, but are there parts of her that, is there any dark side or anything that maybe was to get things done she had to do that were not on the up and up?
That's another great question. One of the challenges for Jane Addams biographers is that she is kind of, she works very hard to be the ideal person that she aims to be, which is to say, to never get angry because she believed in nonviolence, to always work with others, even if your goals didn't completely align, as long as they weren't, you know, doing really bad things. And those are remarkable goals, right? And mm-hmm. she seems to have fairly achieved them. I would say one thing I have noticed, and of course, there's a lot I don't know, but everyone seemed to perceive her to be the way she wanted to be in those ways, you know, very kind and patient and loving and all of that. But she did become often very impatient with wealthy people who didn't understand the issue she was working with and who just wanted to be in her presence of a famous woman. Mm-hmm. And she would tend to dismiss them and just like, you know, I don't want to talk to you, which isn't necessarily kind, but she was a very busy woman. So I can sort of get that.
Sure. Well, plus, she wasn't interested in winning people over, I think, on that sense. You know, she wasn't rubbing elbows, or she was actually doing the hard work, and so she didn't have time.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to put together the second book?
Actually, that's an interesting question, too. Obviously, the first half I already kind of knew cold, and I had a total blast writing the first half because it was basically in my head. It's all fresh material. I only borrowed one paragraph from the first book, and so it was really fun to write it tight and new. That was a fun experience. Second half, I had to do all the research for it,
okay.
So that took longer. But I had a deadline, which was the 150th anniversary of her birth, so I absolutely had to get it done by that time for the publisher to get it out by 2010. And so I pressed on efficiently as I could.
Okay. Now, Mary, you are you do crafts. You sew.
Yeah.
You knit. You do things, and putting a deadline on a creative process can be difficult.
Oh, definitely.
I
was just concerned. I mean, I was thinking of how you go out and about and you know, talk about your book at schools and things. I would suppose you do. How does your book relate to kids today? How does she relate to kids today? And do they ask a lot of questions about her? And what are some of their questions they ask?
Yeah, I haven't done really too many sessions with kids, actually. Maybe it's because I didn't write a children's book.
Right.
And there are a very many children's books about Jane Addams.
Yes, I read quite a few of them.
Right. But I would say in general about what she has to say to kids, I would say it's the message that, you know, many kids already have embraced these days, which is to be open-minded and, you know, friends with people of all different backgrounds, which was something they cultivated at Hull House because all the clubs and classes were open to all. It was a very diverse neighborhood. Once African Americans were mostly in the South Side during Jane Addams' lifetime, but as they started coming to the West Side, they were always very welcome at Hull House also. But most of the diversity was regarding different immigrant backgrounds, which, you know, were barriers in those days even more than today.
Oh, definitely.
And so she had kids always learning from each other's cultures and becoming friends in the theater program. They were performing together. And so that's a wonderful example of something we believe in still today.
That's very interesting.
I mm-hmm. wonder if you dropped Jane Addams in right now, if she would be proud or disappointed or frustrated, you know, what you know about her, if you apply it to the era we're in, just in particular this last, you know, 2 years and the Me Too movement and women's voices being heard, what would her take on that be?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's in some ways I think I have some answers, and in other ways it's hard because she was a woman of her time. Mm-hmm. But Adams absolutely believed in women's equality. She was very frank about sexuality being. She thought sex should be taught in the schools, and in 1910 that was a very radical position. So I think she would have said of the Me Too movement, "This is real." She heard terrible stories about women being raped at, you know, when she was at Hull House, because abused wives came to Hull House to be protected from their husbands. And I'm sure she heard stories of rape as well. So she was totally immersed in the real world. She would not have been at all shocked, that's for sure. And so I'm sure she would have thought it was good to get the information out, because she spent her life, you know, spreading the truth about reality.
Now, you're working on another book about some radical abolitionist feminists. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sarah and Angelina Grimke. These are from a whole earlier period in American history, the early 19th century, born in Charleston, South Carolina, to aristocratic slave-owning family. And they became activists, the first women lecturers on the anti-slavery circuit in 1836. So they were very early, and also the first women to give public speeches to men and women on issues of public debate. So, and they wrote, Sarah wrote Letters on Equality of the Sexes, the first full discussion of women's rights. So they're kind of awesome.
I can't wait to read about them. I know, Mary, I don't know if you share this. Sometimes I get frustrated. I expect things to move much quicker. I know I'm in more of an instant gratification type era where I want to be heard. I want to be heard now. And if you don't hear me, I'm ready to dismiss you. You know, I'm not always interested in putting in the work, but these women dedicated their lives to getting issues heard and people heard and didn't give it up. And then I think I'm lazy.
Move a lot at a quicker pace than they did back then.
I think what you might discover is that the reward that you're looking for of, you know, it's solved. Mm-hmm. It won't be what you get, but you'll get the reward of joint effort.
Joint effort. Yeah, that's true. So I am going to look back to Paul and just get a time on your appearance that you have coming up.
Oh, it's 3 to 5.
3 to 5. Okay, so you're going to be at the Jane Adams Hotel, the St. Jane Hotel on Friday. You're going to be signing your book. You're going to be meeting and greeting. People can make donations.
They can buy a book, and the money will be donated to the Jane Addams Memorial Park, which is right next to the Navy Pier. And I should just say a word about the hotel. It was named in honor of Jane Addams, and as an expression of the hotel's commitment to Chicago, because Addams was a very, very important leader in the city during her lifetime. There is no statue of Jane Addams yet in Chicago, but there needs to be. But at least there's a hotel.
Well, as a traffic person, how does she feel about having a highway named after her now?
I think on April 4th, I-90. When we get our female mayor, maybe they can work on our Jane Addams statue.
It's a good idea.
You know,
so. I think she thinks it should not be a tollway.
Oh, she'd want it to be
right.
Free.
She would be upset about that for sure.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Louise. And we'll post where people can get your book. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
It's my friend Dennis DeYoung. One of my favorite Dennis DeYoung songs, Desert Moon. We haven't had him on the show in a long time. Should we get him back on?
We should have him on. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard that song, actually, but
no,
it sounds nice.
Song.
It's a beautiful
great
song.
All right, so again, I'm not just a big fan of the show. I actually host it, but today, for some reason, Dave sounded better on the microphone than I did. The microphone rejected me, so I've gone back to my room to pout. I look forward to the big meeting we'll have tomorrow to discuss this. Sorry, I apologize for the technical problems this morning. I hope we got through it to the best of our abilities. For all of you texters who want me to grovel, it's not going to happen, but I'll be back tomorrow to discuss this.
I will
further.
Say that, Steve, the texters have not, a couple have pointed it out, but nobody's been negative. They've all been very supportive. So.
And many have said we hope doesn't drown.
Yes.
Because it sounded like
Steve, they
drowning.
Just came back and... They just came back and restocked the mini bar here with more Famous Amos cookies.
Oh, there you go.
So. Hey, I don't know. I felt like the tension was getting too high between us. So I had to leave the room. But Dave, help me out. We need to thank a bunch of people, including, of course, Marlene, from our promotions department, who has literally been at the radio station over 50 years and set up the trip like she has 1,000 trips before, did a wonderful job. Our sales department, all the great clients and partners that were out here. And who am I missing, Dave? The White Sox.
Here, Steve, I want to hear the people you don't want to thank. Let's hear that list.
I'll tweet that out later.
So are you packed up, guys? Like, are you ready to go to the airport?
You know, I always have that question where do you put the dirty laundry on one side and try to salvage the two or three things you didn't wear? Because I end up washing everything anyway.
Yeah, because it gets that smell.
Yeah.
And yeah, I bet you Dave's room was very clean, because remember he had to close all drawers and everything. He has that problem, right, Dave? So everything's good in your room?
First of all, Mary, I wouldn't characterize it as a problem.
Oh, okay.
My room is clean, but it was cleaned every day, but it was neat, I think is the word you were looking for.
And that's why you chose your room over Steve's, yeah.
Well,
Dave, I didn't get a piñata. I don't know what happened in my room, but your piñata was very nice.
It was kind of cool. Yeah. Yeah.
A piñata of
but
what?
I kind of packed my stuff up. I packed my stuff up last night. So, I've got the hot tub right outside my room, so I'm thinking I might just wander out there for we have a little time before we leave for the airport.
There you go.
Nice.
And
Based on the fact that you and I both got about 2.5 hours sleep, are you going to doze off in the piñata and drown? I mean, in the hot tub and drown?
It could happen, yeah. I better take a pass on that.
Yeah, be careful. Anyway, we're back tomorrow. You guys finish this fine broadcast. Thanks, everybody, for putting up with the nonsense and listening. And we're back tomorrow for more. Here's more of Sandberg, Mary, and Dave, the new morning show on WGN.